Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gable Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, Mr. David Chen. A lot of things here in boxing to talk about, you know, this past weekend with Timothy Bradley versus Manny Pacquiao to Jorge Arce to Mike Jones. You know, I know a lot of fight fans were really, really upset Saturday. I mean, some of the comments that I was even hearing and seeing were a bit over the top, you know, like robbery of the decade and et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know, you know, I mean, obviously we're going to allow a lot of people to call in today so they can put in their opinion and their thoughts about Saturday night between Timothy Bradley and Manny Pacquiao. I was calling for the upset special. But I did. I mean, I, you know, being realistic, you know, a person that's a fan of the sport first before anything else, you got to call things the way you see it. And, you know, during the fight and after the fight, you're still very emotional. I wanted to do a show, but then I, you know, thought about it. I said, you know what I need to do? I need to go back. I need to rewatch this fight. I need to make sure before I start bringing up the torch and the pick. Because if, you know, when things are that emotional, when you have so much on the line and you're not sure sometimes because, like I said, things are at a fast pace, that you always want to go back a second time and rewatch a fight. And if you're a hardcore boxing fan like myself, you always want to go back and, I mean, you just go back and watch them regardless if there's a controversial ending or of anything of that factor. You just go back and watch it. And the Manny Pacquiao and Timothy Bradley fight was a fight that I had to go back. Now, originally, the first time I watched it, I probably gave Timothy three rounds or four. Going back and watching it again, the rounds were a lot closer. And nothing added to what HBO commentators were trying to influence or what they were saying, because we already know they're very biased when it comes to their commentary. You know, if you're an HBO fighter, that's what they're going to go for. But without them added to anything, you still watched it a certain way. And then when I went back and I had to rewatch it again, and I said, wow, you know what? This was a bad decision, but it wasn't a robbery. And I never used that word, robbery, even with the emotions of the fight after. I was just in shock that they gave it to Timothy Bradley, knowing he didn't win that fight. In my opinion, he lost 2 to 3 rounds in that bout. Was it competitive? I thought it was. Were there some rounds that would have been difficult to give to either one of those guys? Absolutely. Absolutely. But at the end of the day, I still thought Manny Pacquiao pulled it off. You know, in between those rounds, in the mid rounds, I thought that Timothy Bradley was the one that was picking up the pace, was the guy that was doing the overall work in the ring, where Manny would land one big shot. And to me, it was like, you landed one big shot, and that was it. How does that steal a round? It shouldn't be able to steal a round. It should be the overall. I mean, if you're judging the fight, it's the overall of the round, not just one big shot. And I see my co-host keeps falling off, keeps coming back on, falling off. What's up, Gabriel?
Hey, I don't know what's going on here, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
My phone is, can you hear me okay?
Yeah,
my phone
has
been acting absolutely insane like the last 30 minutes. So that was trying to get in, took me forever, but I'm here now. You know, it is an insane, it's a weird fight. You know, I watched it again, and it did seem closer. I didn't do the absolute round by round. I watched it just as a whole. Just wanted to see the ebb and flow. I'm going to go and do a round by round after the show. Because I haven't really written. I wrote my post fight on it, just my impressions that night. I thought it was a very good fight and a bad decision. I think watching it again, I still feel that way. I think Manny was the clear winner. You know, I had the overall feel like, you know, at least like I felt like 8-4. You know, if I was there was a couple rounds that were tight. You could give it the benefit of the doubt and maybe even push to like 7-5. But I think, you know, people are going absolutely nuts over this. HBO, you know, EDs and they're testing. I'm looking at 16.
You're breaking up really. You're breaking up really, really bad right now, Gabriel. I couldn't hear anything.
Do you know how much I hate when you say that to me?
Can
you
hear me? I'm sorry. Now? I can hear you now.
All right. I know. I don't know what it is, but like I'm getting like zero bars. It's like there's some sort of alien invasion around my house. It's killing my phone. I'm told that the HBO was going to do a segment on PEDs and testing and all that's been going on in the last 6 weeks. And
right.
Now because of the scoring issue, they're going to do it all about fight scoring and judging. And you know, I think it's an important issue. You know,
it is.
But to bump that issue, I was a lot disappointed. I think the next episode they're going to do that unless somebody else gets robbed or some other hot issue happens. I was disappointed. But, I think things do need to change, you know, in scoring. There's so many, like we've always said this on this show, there's so many avenues in boxing. So many different threads you can pull that you go, that needs to change, that needs to change. Okay, that needs to be fixed. So if now we move into scoring, like, cool, because there's not anything really big breaking. Well, actually, there is a really huge story breaking with PEDs, and we'll talk about that a little later with Nonito Donaire and the ramifications of that. But if this is what we need to talk about right now, bad scoring and age limit on judges, maybe adding a judge. I mean, back in the day, the ref used to be one of the judges. Ref used to be only judge, I think, in some cases. Maybe we need to go like, you know, one dude on each side and then have the ref be like the tiebreaker or some dude watching it on TV, like in a, you know, closed-off booth is the tiebreaker. We probably need to do something else because the public
maybe put them in maybe put them in a room isolated so they can't, you know, get influenced by the crowd. I don't know. You know, it's something in that effect.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, to me, there's, and you know, we've had a lot of emails, you know, about the judging and why isn't anything being done about this? And you know what? I think, and what we're working on, Josh McDaniels, a writer for Leaving the Ring, he's actually calling for the application to really kind of find out what are the qualifications, what's the criteria of becoming a judge, how, you know, what do they have to go through? To get that license and that privilege to sit ringside to judge a fight. And I think if you start from the bottom and you figure out all the logistics of how this thing is done, then we could find out the problem because right now we're not we just can't seem to have a way to resolve this unless, you know, I don't want to go back to the German, you know, the World War II days is take the guys on the line up against the wall and shoot them. But if that's what it needs to be done, then let's get that done. You know, we got a great show for tonight.
Yeah, that was one of my questions to Bob was even just the logistics of, you know, how do you pick the judges? Because I don't think anybody knows those procedural questions. Nobody really asks that stuff. Everybody, what I've observed all week, and I didn't really get, you know, I did a mailbag for the first time in a long time because I've kind of just tried to cut myself off from editorializing any place other than here or on, you know, the next round with Steve. But I thought I'd bring it back because fans were upset. And I still didn't really go all into it because I watch a lot of people make columns and this is the end of boxing and, you know, this blah, 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 like this screaming, letting themselves, you know, be impressed by the volume of their voice rather than the content of their words. And for me, I think that's great that Josh is doing that. And that's the guy, you know, that we went to the gym together. And it's, you know, a young writer that we've talked about on the show. I like that idea of let's go find out how to do that. How is it done? What are the processes? Is there an age limit? What is these guys' backgrounds? Well, how do they know so much about judging a fight? All those questions need to be answered. then we can start figuring things out. Then you can get into things like, okay, well, this is how close a promoter actually can get to a judge. Then we know that. Okay, then we can figure out if corruption is possible. I'm not going to say that Bob paid off those judges or whatever. I think that's just, you're just jumping way to conclusions. People are going absolutely crazy. The same people that are yelling at me for actually a rumor I didn't even spread about Floyd Mayweather are the same people screaming that Bob ripped off those judges. And they don't have any more evidence than they claim to, you know, that rumor does. So I think they need to STFU and get educated and then move on from there. That's just me.
You know, let's patch in some fight fans here that, you know, want to talk Manny Pacquiao and Bradley, the decision. And, you know, it's everybody's right. Because I've heard this all week. You know, I'm not a fan anymore. Or, you know, this is why I don't watch boxing, et cetera, et cetera. I've heard it all. And, you know, I'm going to give out the same answer I've given to everybody else that came at me with that quick, this direct decision of what they plan to do with the sport of boxing. Well, if I see you at the fights, or if I hear that you're talking about the fights, I'm going to remind you, you're not a fight fan anymore. So let's patch in our first caller here, and then we got to call in Sugar Shane Mosley, who's on retirement, drinking pina colada, hanging out with Bella. And then we got Tony the Tiger Thompson, who's going to be fighting one of the Klitschko's, a rematch, I believe, with Vitaly Klitschko. Then we're having Danny Jacobs. He's going to be talking about his, I guess you could call an incredible miracle him healing and getting back into the ring. I mean, there's a guy that fell out for a minute, and he's here on Leaving the Ring for the very first time to do an interview with us and talk about everything that's basically has went down since he's had to deal with this problem that medically and health-wise. And then a little later tonight, we're going to have John Molina call in and talk to us about Antonio DeMarco, his matchup in Oakland under the card of Andre Ward and Chad Dawson. Then we got some fights to talk about here on Leaving the Ring. But let's go with our first caller, who is, Frank, he's on it. He was like, bang, not even a minute before the show started. He was on cue already. What's up, brother? How you doing, man? You're on live right now.
Oh, man.
The
What's up, Frank?
Thanks for taking my call, guys. Good to hear from you guys. Man, it's the only way to get in. I'm leaving at the ring. call before David Chang even gets in, period.
But, he figured out how to game the system, Frank.
He did, man.
Absolutely. I was going to screw the system over somehow, and I could spell and type properly if David knows what I mean. I got to say, this past Saturday, I'm a big boxing fan, and you could say that all day to me, David. It was a bad decision. I didn't give it a 11-1. I gave it to a 9-3. I saw Bradley win in three rounds, and I was being gracious on giving him that third. When we say Pacquiao was looking for one punch, man, I just see the combos hitting him, that right, like, cross-slash-uppercut hook that Margarito used to throw back in the day, was Pacquiao's, like, illest weapon instead of using the jab. And, all the way around to say he threw one punch, those numbers didn't represent a one punch throw at all. And, the guy out damn nearly doubled his numbers and landed at almost 12.5% higher landing ratio than Tim Bradley. You know, when shit like this is going on in boxing and as fans will say, oh, we're not going to watch it no more. The thing is, when I say I'm not going to watch the Tim Bradley Pacquiao 2 fight and I'll just wait a week until it's on HBO, is bullshit to me, because unlike the Super Bowl, unlike all this and that, we pay for these events, man. I did a $500 spread in food, ordered the pay-per-view fight, got all the beers, the tequila, everything ready to go. And then you invite all these people that are half-assed boxing fans. Mm-hmm. That'll be like, oh, okay, this seems like that we're sold. We're gonna come down and watch it. All right, cool. And then they come in and see this bullshit that happens on TV. Yeah, man, it just turns people off. So idiots like us that are going to say, oh, I'm going to be in the sport forever no matter what. It's my true blood and, like, my first love. Yo, like, that doesn't affect us crazily. It pisses me off, but, yeah, I'm still going to watch it now.
You know what, Frank? It does, man. I mean, trust me. I know exactly what you mean. When you invite a bunch of folks and you stick up, it's like, you know, you stick up for your sport and you preach your sport. And you expect that sport to do the same thing, to back you up to the fullest. And when that feeling. And it's hard. It's hard to front and agree with people when they come up to you and say, man, this is why I don't watch this, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, if you're basing, and this is just a casual fan, that's not you, Frank. This is a casual fan. If you're just basing one fight and trying to make that as the pedestal of the whole realm of boxing, then you're highly misinformed, because we've had some great fights and we've had some bad decisions in boxing, you know. And I put it to a guy that he was a casual fan. He's a boxing fan. I say how many basketball events have fallen short? And he'd be like, it's the same thing. When you got enough of something, doesn't necessarily mean that it's always going to come down to what you want it, you know. And that's just part of the sport. That's part of life. And that's just
if you're going to miss the basket, if you're going to miss a three-pointer to lose the game, I'm cool with that. If a referee is going to call a foul from a distance and nothing happens, and that's what won the game, then I'm going to question the sport of basketball. And that's kind of what we got going on in boxing right now. And
basketball actually had somebody get implicated in cheating while being a referee. You know,
absolutely.
I mean, boxing's got its corruption. That's, you know, I don't buy, you know, when people say there was a few very experienced writers and other people around the sport. Like, it's absolutely preposterous to think that judges could be bought off. Like hold the phone. Like, generally, I know fights were kind of fixed by paying off the fighter to throw the fight. I mean, you might as well just go right to the source. But with our long and nefarious history, I can't believe the judges can't be bought. I'm not saying those three gentlemen. I'm not saying Bob Arum. I'm just saying, in general, somewhere in the world, there's a guy that could be corrupted. It just, and especially in our blood sport, it has that history. But, you know, what I say to people that say, because of this fight, you know, this is why I don't watch boxing. I'm like, this is probably the only time you watch boxing. That's
exactly
why you're upset, you know. So, like, calm down, you know.
Yeah.
Like, but you guys got to agree that Gabriel Capetillo, man, against Cloud, that motherfucker got robbed, man. I mean, his mama passed out in the goddamn ring after the fight when she heard her son won. She hit the canvas, like.
Yeah. It was hilarious. That was a straight up terrible decision. What happened? Santa Cruz versus Casa Mayor. They're robbery. The guy that lost. I was arguing with a guy behind me who was very outraged on press row, and you know, I said, "Well, were you this upset about Marquez Pacquiao 3?" He said, "No, that was a close fight." I'm like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah." So, but I'm like, "Do you feel like Marquez won?" I believe he did, as I recall. That's a lot. It was a close fight, I'll agree, but Marquez won. He said, "Yeah, that's not really a robbery." And I'm saying, "Well, yeah, but if I pull out a gun and I steal a dollar from you, I'm still robbing you, am I not?" And
right.
A close fight is that. But there was no outrage. I pissed off a lot of the Filipino media just because I said, "Where was this outrage when Marquez got robbed?" And we all
not even that. I mean, where were they robbed?
That third fight was clear.
Of any other fight besides Pacquiao. I mean, I see these guys coming out of the woodworks immediately after this. You know, I mean, guys, I mean, and I know part of
it. I got to be honest, Dave, I really wish they were this passionate about PEDs, which is dangerous, actually. These guys got robbed. They still made millions. Guys doing PEDs are putting other guys' health at risk. Don't see a lot of people doing on that bandwagon. It's very easy to be upset about a bad decision. It's very hard to do something about it, and I doubt any of these guys. Hopefully Josh becomes that guy, because I doubt any of the majors are actually going to do something about it. They'll report about other people doing things about it, or they'll take stories about guys that will do good investigations and to make themselves look good. But these guys will just roll along on the status quo because they're lazy.
Absolutely.
I have
Frank,
a quick comment, really quick.
Go ahead.
Really quick. If Pacquiao left Bob Arum, like De La Hoya, Floyd Mayweather, Roy Jones Jr., all these cats that did it back in the day, there's a certain history in that backs up a lot of people saying F you to Bob Arum. And I think at this point in time, that would be Pacquiao's best decision.
But that's like saying if Elvis left the Colonel after like 10, 15 years. The Colonel
Elvis
helped build
dead,
that.
But Manny Pacquiao nor Bob Arum is. So.
But
I
what
mean,
I'm
I
saying
just,
is that Bob built all those brands and then they left. But those brands, Oscar was on his own for 8 fights before Bob got involved. And for several of those fights, he flopped at the Olympic Auditorium. He flopped on TV. Then Bob turned him into a superstar. So I don't.
He even flopped after he left Bob for a while. Remember that? I mean, he was trying to get he got another guy to invest in his company, and then it flopped. He went back to Bob. You know, Frank, I got to put you on.
Now his company has a silent partner in Al Heyman.
Right. Frank, I got to put you on hold.
I don't agree.
Because we got Shane Mosley on with us. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, no doubt. No, man. We'll see you guys.
All right, brother.
Always, Frank.
You know, and I understand.
I always like when Frank calls in. That's a real fight fan. That dude buys tickets, and he goes to fights. I value Frank's opinion very much so.
Absolutely. Even though I was listening to the Boxing Fix, and Frank was like, I'm not calling in another boxing radio show.
Uh-oh. It's an addiction. Sport is an addiction.
You know, but it is. It's a huge addiction. You can't get away from it. It's just like, man. So calling in Mr. Shane Mosley here on Leaving the Ring. He is on retirement, so he's probably on a yacht.
Hello.
Can I please speak to Shane Mosley?
This is Shane.
Hey, Shane, this is Dave Duenas and Gabriel Montoya from Leaving the Ring. How you doing, brother?
Man, I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing good, man. So how's retirement treating you? Are you drinking some pina coladas on a yacht yet on the beach?
No, I'm not doing any of that. I'm working out with my son, training him. Basically, getting ready to go to the gym right now and do some more training. You know, keep myself young and moving around and stuff.
You know, I want to congratulate you on your retirement, man. Not just of your whole career. I mean, you've brought it. You've made people excited. You've upset at people. You've basically have put fans in tears, and then you brought them right back into the mix again. I mean, when you think about your whole overall, and I was thinking about this today at work, man, and I was like, man, you know, Shane has done it. He's been there. He's done that. We're talking about Prospect 31 and what was it, 32 wins, 32 KOs, or was it like 31 KOs? I can't remember. I know it was in that realm. Had the highest.
I was 38 with
35 KOs. And then from there, you went on and beat the Golden Boy, and immediately – I mean, you know, everybody was saying, okay, here's the new Sugar Ray Robinson. You were on an ultra high. And then from there, everything just spun off. I mean, you had fame, and then fame just turned into hate. And then from hate, it went back to love, and it just kept going back and forth. You know, I mean, you've been through controversy to bad decisions. Now, when you look at the overall of the sport now that you're retired, and you look at everything, even what happened this past Saturday, how do you think these fighters, like a Timothy Bradley right now that's in a controversial bad decision, how do you think they have to handle it since you know exactly how that feels to be in that position?
Well, I mean, the first thing he needs to do is look at it for what it is, you know, what he truly believes in his heart, because you can't fool yourself on what you think, you know, the decision is. Or you can say what you want to say, but, you know, in your heart you know what's what. But I just think that, you know, he needs to look at the mistakes he made in the fight, leading up to the fight and before, and don't make the same mistake in the next fight when they fight the rematch.
How much, man, Shane, how much does it really honestly take out of you when you have fans that are just calling you a bunch of names, that are just completely against you when just the other day they loved you?
You know, it's hard because you work so hard to try to please the fans, and then and it's like they turn their back on you. So it's a hard feeling to feel that type of, you know, to feel that hatred really coming at you. You know, it should be, okay, well, you know, yeah, you know, you thought I lost everything, but not, you know, not that type of hatred. But, I mean, that's just the fans. So you have to brush that off and prove yourself the next time.
Absolutely. I'm going to pass it over to my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya.
How you doing, Shane? Welcome, man. First off, just an honor to speak with you, especially in this time. You know, you just retired, and I just want to congratulate you on a hell of a career. You, it might have been, never failed to disappoint me. I mean, the last few years, it was the fights weren't as good. You were an older fighter, I'll be honest with you. But you always were there, right there, and you were always willing to get in with the best people in the sport. I don't like to kind of dovetail off what you guys are saying. I don't understand fans that would turn on you like that. It doesn't make any sense when you got guys. We can't even get Pacquiao and Mayweather into the ring, and you'd have done it three times by now.
Exactly.
So just congratulations there. I mean, do you have? I mean, it's a little soon. It's not like you retired and turned 80, so you have this like 30-year perspective on the career, on the sport. But you have your own perspective, and I'm curious now. What do you think about all that's going on, Bradley Pacquiao? How upset fans are, and the state of where we're at, where you know testing is now a big issue, and how we're going to do it, and how are we going to judge, and all those things. I'm curious for your perspective.
Well, first off, I think that the fans and the people shouldn't be upset with Bradley because Bradley fought hard and he did the best he could do that night. That was the best he had that night. So don't be mad at Bradley. Be mad
right.
at the referee. Know who the referee or the judges were for that fight and be mad at them. There is the one that needs to be held accountable if something like that. If you're mad, you'd be angry at them, not at Bradley. Bradley went in there and he fought. He didn't just fall down and not fight. You know, he got hit with some good shots, and he couldn't just say, oh, Pacquiao's too strong for me, and couldn't lay down. But he fought the whole fight. He gave 100% all. So you should be happy and proud for Bradley because Bradley did give his hips at all. It's not his fault that the judges scored the way they scored. Now, I was talking with another reporter, and I was saying, well, maybe they have a system where – you know, they always hold the fighter accountable for everything, you know, drug testing and all this type of stuff. Maybe they need to hold the judges accountable for drug testing and stuff like that because before they start judging a match or whatever, maybe they might, you know, have done some drugs, cocaine, drinking or whatever, where they're not coherent enough to make the right decision. And you know what I'm saying? So don't hold the fighter accountable for that, for something the judge might have done the night before. He might have got an argument with his wife or girlfriend or whoever, and now it's a bad decision. So I think that they need to be held accountable. And I was also thinking about something like what they do with basketball, the instant replay, you know, where you have a challenge.
Right.
And maybe the manager of the fighter at the end of the fight can challenge that fight. I challenge that fight. And then if it comes up where enough other judges say that, I think that, you know, Pacquiao, whatever, maybe it's a no contest and they just fight again anyway. You know, so that way you're not just giving up Pacquiao's belt on that type of decision. And I was thinking that maybe they can have one challenge per year. So you won't have the fighters or the managers saying, okay, I want to challenge this fight. I want to challenge this fight. Just challenge the fight just to challenge them. So they have to make that right challenge. Like this would be a fight that the manager of Pacquiao probably would want to challenge. You know, maybe the Marquez fight, you know, they might not want to challenge it because it was kind of a close fight. So they say, oh, no, that fight's the same. Maybe they want to challenge it. Maybe they don't. But this type of fight, maybe they want to challenge it. So, I mean, there's different ways of going about it to try to make the sport more fair for not just the fighters, but also the fans and the people that are betting big, large sums of money for Pacquiao to win and, you know, that Bradley wins. I mean, there's all kind of, you know, little scenarios, but I think that might help out a little bit, have the judges be held accountable for their actions. What they do.
Do you think that you're a big Vegas fighter? You fought there many times against big names.
Yes.
Do you think that the gaming industry has too much influence? I've always thought that the 12 round, going from 15, which is an odd number, to 12 rounds, which is an even number, opens up for more draws, which maybe meant more pushes in terms of betting, or it was also would make it so there would be more rematches, which would probably be a better reason. But it seems to me that the gaming industry has too much influence over an athletic event. Would you agree?
I mean, they have a big influence because they're putting a lot of money for it. I mean, if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't probably be fighting for millions and millions of dollars that we're fighting for. So
true.
I'm not sure they have too much influence, but I think, like I said, that, you know, the judges need to be held accountable. You know, maybe they do have some influence of it, but, you know, I mean, the fighter, if he knocks the guys out, if he fights the way he's supposed to fight, he should win the fight. That's just the way it's supposed to go.
Shane, let me ask you this. In judging, since we're on the subject of judging, in your honest opinion, as a, you know, as a professional fighter and now retired fighter, is there such thing as rig judging, paid off judges, or maybe judges with vendettas against a fighter?
I mean, all those sound like they can be true. I mean, you have all those can be in cahoots. I mean, they could be that. I mean, a judge could be betting on another fighter to win, think he's going to win, and votes that way. I mean, you definitely can have that. And that's why I said when you have another judge or judges, a panel of judges that are judging behind those judges and making it where, like I said, if it's off a round or two, then maybe you don't penalize the judge. But if it's all five rounds, then, you know, you have to penalize the judge.
Right.
He's judging off. But if it's like one round off here or there, then the commission can say, okay, well, it's like one or two rounds off. It's pretty much about the same. You know, we're going to keep the fight the same. The commission has the chance to go back over it too, because what I was seeing at the fight when I was there, you know, I had Pacquiao so far ahead, but there was a lot of rounds where Pacquiao was throwing punches and missing, and the crowd was going crazy. It's like, well, Pacquiao didn't hit anything.
Yeah,
there's a lot of rounds where I seen Pacquiao missing. So, and then when I did hear him screaming, I heard there's a lot of people jumping up in front of me. I couldn't really see. I just heard the crowd screaming. I heard Doug Bradley getting out. I seen Bradley getting out the way. And, you know, it's kind of hard to really assess it. But, I had like eight rounds of four. And, you know, but that's just, like I said, I couldn't really see like I want to. And then
right.
On TV, you know, it might be something different. You might have the announcers. Carol Letterman said, well, I have Pacquiao winning all these rounds. So now you sway the people to go for Pacquiao, maybe.
I was going to ask you
there's a lot of different variables about it. So then you have to have a panel of judges turn off the volume and just look at the fight, you know, and see what it is, what it really is. If it's
right.
That close, it's that close. But if not, you know what I'm saying? No contest, and do a rematch.
Absolutely.
I'm going to ask you that, because you brought it up about Letterman. Do you think that HBO, to me, is the most kind of leading, the way they announce things? They have an unofficial score. They have CompuBox. Now they've got, like, this graphic where you can see where a dude's been hit. But they can't measure, like,
right.
How hard a punch is. I heard they're working on that. I've actually heard that for a few fights they have a sensor now wrapped into the glove.
Yeah, put in the glove. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you worn that?
I've never worn it before, but I heard about it.
So they're now trying to measure, like, punching power. But do you think that they've kind of miseducated fight fans on how to watch a fight? Because they never really talk about body punching or defense or ring generalship. It's always about the punches landed. And that's not the way you judge a fight. I mean, it's only, in one way it is, but in other ways it isn't, right?
Yeah, it could be a little misleading, you know, where they think they're just landing shots and punches and stuff. And like I said, Harold Lemon might, you know, he might like a fighter, or he might just believe, you know, the fighter is doing more. But that's his opinion, you know? So you can't really, it does sway the fans a certain way. And like I said, there's so many different things you need. You need honest judges to go in there and judge, and also you need a group of judges behind them, if needed, to judge behind those judges, because there's a lot of people spending a lot of money in betting and really wanting their fighter to win, or it can be this fighter's career that if he loses, maybe he doesn't get that second opportunity for another fight or whatever. There's a lot of things at stake, so they have to be either right or close to right.
Right. I want to talk a little bit about your last fight. And I got to tell you this, you know, I mean, watching the fight, I was around a lot of people, and they were like, you know, Shane's not the same, doesn't look the same. And at the end of the fight, I was like, yo, I don't care what any of you guys say. Mm-hmm. He still got a world-class chin, man. I mean, you were taking shots after shots. And the other thing I got to give it to you, too, Shane, is that how many dudes that honestly are past 40 years old and have no quit in them? Like, you were nonstop. Like, you didn't want to stop. You know, you were trying to bring back the old Shane, the young Shane, with those combinations, and you were putting them together. I don't care what HBO was saying. They were saying, like, you know, he can't put his punches together. You were trying. But what made that final decision that so many folks have been saying, you need to hang him up? What made that final decision? Was it immediately after the fight? Was it after sitting at home? Or what did it come down to?
Well, actually, it was actually during the fight.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I knew there was a lot of shots I could hit him with. There's a lot of things I could do, but I just couldn't do it. And, you know, with this, so, you know, I wasn't the same, you know, and I feel that if I couldn't beat a guy like Canelo, which, I mean, he's a good fighter, and he's a world champion, he's young and all that stuff, but I know where my skills are, I know where my talent is, and I know where he's at, and I know that I should be above where he's at. I shouldn't be really getting hit with that many shots, which there's some shots that I just took just because I was trying to get closer to him so I could hit him harder. My punch power didn't feel like it was the same. I didn't get the same effect when I was throwing my big shots. You know, I just felt like I was, you know, in the ring, I just felt like I was older, you know, and just didn't feel the same. And I said, okay, well, there's a problem here. But I feel this way after the fifth and sixth round, but I'm still going to try to knock him out until the last. I'm going to go as hard as I can to the last bell. If I can't get it done, I just can't get it done. But I already knew from the fifth round, about the fourth or fifth round, where I was at. Not that I thought that he was going to beat me by the fourth or fifth round, but I just knew, yeah, I'm not the same person. You know, I didn't know if I knew what was going to happen in the end result, because I still was going to be fighting to my best ability. I just knew in the fourth or fifth round, I knew. I said, you know what? I'm not the same person.
If you would have knocked him out. If you would have knocked him out, though, let's just change the scenario.
Even if I would have knocked him out, and which I thought I could have, probably, you know, maybe the 10th, 11th round, if it would have opened up, I think I could have cracked him a couple of shots and maybe knocked him down with my experience and all that stuff. But he fought a very good fight. He fought very, I should say, not patient, but he was very, he had good defense, and he countered very well. Like, he kept to his guns. He didn't stray away. He didn't start going crazy. He stayed to his guns, and he fought a great fight. I was actually proud of him, was happy of Canelo. I thought he did a great job for a young guy. He fought good. But if I would have got that shot that I was looking for, I would have been very happy. But I would have still knew where I was at. I already knew with the fourth, fifth round, I knew where I was at. But I just said, okay, well, I'm here now. We got to knock him out. But like I said, if I would have got that knockout, I mean, it would have been happy, but I would have knew where I was at.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow. That's kind of a bombshell, dude. I'm going to take that in for a second. That's how do you keep, like Dave said, you've never had any mental quit in you. No quit at all. But, I mean, we all know that's the mental part of this. So how do you finish a fight and just kind of know, like, hey, I'm not the same guy, but I got to finish this.
Well, I finish it because I believe, yeah, I'm not the same guy, but I'm not an ordinary guy either. I'm not the same, you know, I'm not the same pound king that I was, but I'm just not an ordinary guy either. So I can go in there, and I can still, if I try, I can still get something done here. Something still can happen. It just won't happen as fast as I want it to. It won't happen like I want it to. It's a lot harder. It can still happen, but it just won't happen the way I know it should and I want it to.
Dave,
did you
want to
go?
I have one question for Shane really quick, you know, because the one thing that I thought that was just weird and very disrespectful, okay, and I don't know how, you know, if you thought the same thing, Gabe, because I never talked to you about it, but I thought this was just weird and very disrespectful that Golden Boy, which takes nothing away from Winky Wright, okay, you know, Winky is a great fighter of his own right, but you were with Golden Boy from the bat. And they had no press release of your retirement. They had basically nothing. There was no fireworks. There was nothing. There was no celebration. It was just dead silence. Why do you think right. that is? Why is there an animosity towards Golden Boy, probably the owner, Oscar De La Hoya, and yourself, when it's always been played out you guys were good friends? And I never believed that. I just believed you guys tolerated each other. I mean, it's like, you know, when there's two good-looking dudes on the block, you know, and you just tolerate the other guy. Like, yeah, he's cool, man, whatever, you know what I'm saying? And you guys hang out because you know you both can draw chicks. That's it.
Well, with me and Oscar, you know, we were always cordial and cool with each other, and we still are. It was always weird, you know, being kind of like not behind the bar in the shadow, but just it was weird because even when I was coming up as a lightweight, some of the writers wouldn't write about me because of Oscar. L.A. was belonged to Oscar, so I went to the East Coast, and I started to become big in the East Coast. And then after a while, after I knocked out everybody and was lightweight champion, knocking out everybody, the East Coast writers were like, man, you guys have a, talking to the West Coast, you guys have a diamond mine right here, and you don't even write about him?
Right.
Are you guys crazy? So and then I came back out here to the West Coast. And when I beat Oscar, that's when the West Coast started in 2000. That's when the West Coast started getting behind me, and I became more worldwide. Like, I couldn't be denied anymore. So it was kind of like I was kind of pushed up under the rug and kind of hid and held quiet until I just bust my way out of it. And they had to write about me. They had to talk about me because I was just that good. And I think that goes for the same thing again. I think that same thing kind of happens is where it's like, well, you know, Oscar is a great fighter and he does all these great things, but it's kind of like, I'm always pushed up under the rug. You know, they don't want to talk about my story. They don't want to talk about what I went through and all that different type of things. It's just kind of like pushed under the rug, and then everybody else does their thing. I don't know. It just seems like it's always
fair.
A foot or something over me to keep me hanging down. Like, there's always something, you know, from 2003, I think it was 2003 or something like that, where the Balco thing came in. It was like that was the best thing that could have ever happened to probably Golden Boy or anybody, cause they could just like, or anybody, because it's like they hold the weight over me. I'm like, well, come on.
Right.
You guys know that. I'm not that type of person. You know what I'm saying? You know what it is. You know, I've seen this person one time in my whole entire life. You know what I'm saying? And he comes in and basically wrecks my world again. So I'm always, I'm constantly under the eight ball.
I always thought that you should have a statue in front of the Staples Center because you won your fights there.
Yeah.
I won all the fights there. I'm from L.A. The crazy part about it is that I've been number one in California from day one since I was 9 years old.
Wow.
I was California state champion when I was 9 years old. 10 years old, 11 years old, I'll still tell you about it. They used to call, they used to say, is that Shane Mosley coming down, that Sugar Shane coming down? Because my name was Sugar Shane when I was 10 years old. Is that Sugar Shane coming to town to fight? Because nobody really wanted to fight me because I was the number one guy out here in California since I was 9. And then I was number one in the nation when I was 17 years old in 1989-92. I lost to Vernon and didn't go to Olympics. But I was still the number one guy even then. Then comes professional. I knocked everybody out. The number one guy, still champion, all that stuff. But I've been like the top guy for a long time. But it seemed like I've been pushed up under the rug, though. You know, that's my only, if you will, bad feeling about the whole thing, about the whole boxing thing, is just being like the second guy when I was always the number one guy.
Let me ask you something. You mentioned the Balco thing and how they hold that over your head. I've always wondered why Oscar never really made a big deal out of it publicly, and why he never sought to overturn the decision. Or did he? And I don't know that.
I don't know. I think I was with the company then. I was with Golden Boys, so they really couldn't do that. With the company, because they couldn't try to overturn or whatever, but there was always kind of little something about it. Even though, you know, I told Richard Schaefer and, you know, Oscar, I told him exactly everything that went down, even before the fight would happen, who was the person, the strength and training guy that I had with me that, you know, that brought me to this guy. And then the guy, I mean, the whole thing, you know, from point A to point B, we would go through the whole thing. They know the truth, but they want to, you know, like act like something's different than that. They know that I'm not vindictive. I'm not trying to cheat, or I was trying to do nothing crazy. You know, they know I'm not the type of person, and that's why even today when they have the beta testing, the USADA testing, and all those testings, I never came up positive with anything. I never even came up positive with nothing anyway, but I never came up positive with none of that. You know,
with either one of those. You've actually been tested more than any other boxer besides Victor Ortiz, actually.
Yeah. I did all that, and I never came up positive with any of that stuff. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you know. If I knew about it, then I would probably come up positive. I'd probably get caught with something because that's something that I would have done, but I don't do that. So that's why I don't get. That's why nothing ever came up like that, because I just don't do it.
Right.
You know?
Now, the first time I think the last time you were on, we talked a bit about this, and we've talked about this in person. You said that I'd never tested positive. Victor Conte and Daryl Hudson both listened to the interview, and they do have a different take. I don't know if you want to go down that road down right now. We don't have to. We can do it privately, which I would prefer.
Okay, that's fine.
I would do it privately. I know
okay,
fans
that's
are
fine.
Just, yeah. Both fans probably just, you know, everybody kind of just went, aw. But I respect you in your retirement interview. This isn't your Balco.
Yeah, but what happened with Daryl and Victor, and they both tried to team up against me because Daryl Hudson was mad at my then wife, Jen Mosley, was mad at her because she was always on in his ass about different things.
Right.
So he wanted to get back at her, so he got back at me and through Victor. That was the whole thing. That was the whole thing with Daryl trying to team up with Victor to go against me is because he was mad at when I was with Jen. He wanted to get back at her or the family or whatever because he was just mad at her.
Just to remind Shane really quick, you're retired, brother. You don't have to be cordial anymore. You don't have to be, you know, interview. You can just let it loose. You're retired. You know what I mean? You got that privilege. You got the badge. You're a warrior.
Boxing is my life. Boxing is my world. This is what I'm going to continue to do.
Right.
You know, I'm looking to promote fights. I'm looking to advise fighters. You know, my son's boxing. He's getting better and better every single day. And I'm proud of, every time I look at him, I'm like, wow, he's really, really turning into a great fighter, actually. And you guys are going to really be surprised when you see him get out there when I finish with him. Everybody's gonna be surprised that the new little sugar's gonna be in town. He's gonna be ready.
I work on the beat and I go to all of most of the fights. Golden Boy doesn't credential me anymore. At least that's what I'm told. But they're a little mad at me. But I understand the idea of time and place. And right now, this is about your career. This is about your retirement. Like I said, we can talk at some other point. I'd love to, but. But right now, you know, it would be.
And I
want to
know what's going on, too.
Okay, I know you do. I know you do. And it's, I'd rather do it privately. I respect you too much. But let me ask you this. What was your toughest fight, in your opinion?
My toughest fight? What would my toughest fight be? The toughest fight might be with Winky. I mean, the hardest fight I had going back and forth, you know, fighting with them, and then Winky. you know, like a long drawn-out fight.
Yeah.
Probably the first one would have been pretty stiff for me, I think. Yeah. Because it was the defense and all that stuff, and it was going back and forth. That would have been the toughest fight to do.
Yeah, his defense was solid, man. I mean, it was solid.
He was a strong guy, too.
Yeah.
Do you think because he didn't have a lot of knockouts, people thought he didn't hit hard?
But he didn't really – it wasn't really his hitting power. It was really, like, his consistency, his defense, and that he was, you know, to work, to just stay right there and punch with you and go into a shell and then go right back to punching again, go back to a shell, and he was just right there. So he was constantly – and you know, you felt like you was constantly in a fight with him, you know.
Yes.
You know.
So I mean, go ahead.
You talk about your son, and I can't wait to see him. First off, and I'm glad that the legacy of the Moses is going to continue. You know, my kids have a chance to see, you know, what I had a chance to see is yourself. You know, I've spoken to your dad numerous times. I've went down when he was working at a gym in Pomona, and he would talk about the off sparring that you had a chance to do. You know, like when you went down and fought Julio Cesar Chavez. You know, I have a DVD of you sparring with Genaro Hernandez at a high school auditorium. A Zoom announcing is one fight, though I never had a chance to see because I believe it wasn't filmed. Now, when you have all that experience, and a lot of fighters nowadays don't have that experience and stuff, you know, what do you think they have to do in order to brush up their skills, in order to be familiar to different styles, regardless with amateur? Because even amateur, you're going to be limited because you're fighting guys that are actually trying to reach that extra step. You had that chance of fighting guys that were seasoned. You had that chance of fighting guys that were already great. What do you tell your son that he needs to do to make that next level before going pro?
Well, I put him in there with the different top professional fighters and champions. I mean, he's been there with Lucas Matisse's and all these guys to spar with. You know, I go to Houston and I spar with somebody like that. I might put him in there with Lara to spar with a little bit, to learn some different things in Southpaw. You know, Charlo, the twin, Jamal Charlo, he's another guy that spars with us. Because a couple of other professionals out here, young, up-and-coming professionals, 8-0, whatever, spars with him. So I put him in there, different people, even, Enrique Arnelles, you know, I put him in there with him and let him work with him, let him train him and teach him some stuff when he's sparring with him. He spars with me a little bit. So he learns different tricks and different things of the trade, and that's what's going to help him to become better. It's getting in the ring with pretty much everybody, sparring with pretty much everybody, and that's what I did when I was coming up. That's why I was so good.
Absolutely, man.
Let me ask you one last thing, and just follow up to you talking about your son. Looking back at the sport, you know, and where it is now and what it needs, if you could put one thing into your son's fighting that everybody in the sport kind of lacks, in my opinion, what would it be?
Oh, man. I mean, he's pretty much complete. The only thing that he needs to know now is just know that he's that good. You know, believe in what he's learned, believe in what he can do. That's pretty much it. When you go into a fight, just believe in what you can do. Believe in your speed, your power, your movement, everything. I mean, he's a good fighter. You know, he pretty much has all the abilities. It's just now it's just believing and knowing. And once he gets that, once he really, really knows that he has all that, then it's going to be problems for these fighters.
Man, we wish you all the best in the world. Yeah, for you and your son. And you enjoy your retirement, Shane. And I hope this is not the last time we get a chance to speak to you. We'd like to make you a regular here on the Leaving the Ring panel so we could talk and chop it up. I mean, I think we could literally keep you on for 3 hours, man, but we won't torture you like that.
we'll get together and do some more talking. I'd like to hear about the other inside, so.
Absolutely, yeah, man. And,
absolutely.
And again, really quick, you know, thank you for all the great fights, for all the great memories on the behalf of myself and all the fans out there around the world, brother. It's well deserved. Your retirement, enjoy it, and can't wait to see your son stepping in the ring.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it.
All right, you take care.
Thank you.
All right, man. You take care, man. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Sugar Shane Mosley here on Leaving the Ring, retired champion. And you think about a guy that's been through the thick and thin of boxing, a roller coaster career. Shane's the first one that's going to come to mind. You know, from coming up hard as a prospect to being glorified as a champion to being ridiculed after. That's a roller coaster. There's nothing that this guy hasn't been doing, you know. Been there, done that. We talk about bad decisions, bad judging, bad tests. A lot of stuff,
yeah,
man.
A lot of stuff. I mean, he's kind of done it all, you know. And
yeah.
Sorry to, I know a few people are like, come on, dude. You can't just like cut that conversation off. But there's just certain things. Maybe hopefully one day I'll.
Well, that's just the thing. You know, we talk about, talked about this before, integrity. You know, it's just, you want to give, you know, because we had one fighter, which he did clarify. He said, we did it. He finally said it. You know, you guys didn't set me up, which was Kid Chocolate called in last week. And that's the one thing that we just don't do it here on Leaving the Ring. We want to give you the opportunity. We've had, and I won't name their names because that'd just be dirty of us of doing that, but we've had fighters that we want to bring on, and we give them heads up. This is what we're going to talk about, and this is what we're going to ask. And
we don't give like specific questions, but topics, just to clarify.
Right. And has it stopped them from coming on Leaving the Ring? Absolutely. It has. You know, they've changed their mind, said, you know what, I don't want to go there. And, I can't talk about it legally. And it's happened recent. So we give opportunities because I feel as our job, it's only human of us to do something like that. And it's the right thing to do. You know,
it's time and place, you know, sometimes
right.
You know, right after a fight when a guy gets his ass kicked, it's, you know, sometimes you just don't rub it in. You know, you don't rub the salt in. And in this case, it's like he's calling us to, like, celebrate his retirement. I don't need to go into Balco right now. Like, that's just kind of, you know, rude.
Absolutely,
so, you
know,
and, man. But what was nice about it was he was like, I'd love to talk to you about that. And he responded to my respect and, like, yeah, we can do that another time. That's great. Then let's do that, you know, and we'll do it, and it'll be cool, you know.
And I think Shane has
been like a 3-hour
truth,
show.
You know? Right.
Yeah.
I think he has a good time here on Leaving the Ring. When I called him up, he was like, yeah, man, I'd love to come on and stuff, you know, and really upbeat. I mean, you could really to me, I could really tell that this is a different Shane Mosley. From when he was a fighting Shane, he was more kind of reserved, maybe – I wouldn't say angry, but the focus, the intensity of being focused as a fighter was there. Where, you know, even with our last interview, leading into the Canelo fight, you saw more of a relax, more of a, you know what, I'm 40 years old. I think I deserve to say what I want to say, and I'm going to say it, whether you like it or you don't. And that's just plain and simple, you know. We do have a next guest that's scheduled at 6 o'clock, but just really quick, let's patch in a fight fan here on Leaving the Ring. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, call in, speak to myself, Dave Duenas, with my co-host Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, our producer, Mr. David Chen. Be sure to tune in every Sunday night at 5 Pacific and 8 Eastern, The Boxing Fix, and also our all-Spanish radio show, our sister station, Noche de Boxeo, which is on the same times as well, on Monday night. So let's patch in Avery, who wants to talk Pacquiao and Bradley. Also, a shout-out to Shane Mosley. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. I'm sorry. I didn't even hit him off mute, man. My bad, brother. Now you're on live on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
Doing good, brother.
Doing,
how you
man?
Doing, man?
Yeah, you know, I want to give a shout out to Shane Mosley. I grew up watching him fight, and I want to tell him to enjoy his retirement. And about the Bradley and Pacquiao fight, what I don't get is why would they rob Pacquiao, who's like, you know, the king of boxing? I mean, that's what I don't get.
You know, yeah. It could be a lot of scenarios.
Well, go ahead, Dave. Go ahead.
This is my thinking, is that, you know, and I could be completely off and completely wrong, because honestly, it boils down to the judges, the promoter, and the fighters, and the guys that are really in that mix of things, you know.
Right.
But my thinking was that there could have been a possibility that, you know, it wasn't all Garden of Eden between Pacquiao and Top Rank. I don't know.
Yeah, that was what somebody was saying, allegedly, that Pacquiao, it was his like last fight on Top Rank, which I don't know, but I heard that.
That's not true. Might have had issues
or yeah. something.
You know, Teddy put that out there, and my response uh-huh. to that is, Teddy, when you bring out those emails that apparently you saw or your buddy had about
yeah.
Pacquiao and the test, like when you produce those and or even talk about them again, then maybe we'll buy this theory, because I'm sorry, but that was kind of, he kind of talked about, like people got mad at me about printing that one email. He talked about emails that didn't exist, and people bought that and said bad things about Pacquiao. So to me, if you want my theory on it,
mm-hmm.
I talked to Bob.
But isn't that a theory?
Well, hang on a second. We got Andre Johnson coming in. Can we put this call on hold and we'll answer it? Because I really want to talk about this.
Yeah, yeah.
Hang on one
Stay on hold, Avery. Because I want to talk about this too. Because I, you know, it's a theory. I mean, I didn't hear Teddy say that. I'm just going off of my theory. But go ahead, brother. Let's patch him in, Tony Thompson. Which is Tony Thompson having a rematch with Vladimir Klitschko, big heavyweight, and well-deserved. He beat Maurice Harris to get back into that position. And I got to tell you, man, Tony the Tiger Thompson, to me, looks like a very focused guy. And as soon as Gabriel clicks over and lets me know that we have him on, then we can do our interview here with him on Leaving the Ring. If you're just tuning in, we just had Sugar Shane Mosley, retired champion, here on us and talk to us about the judges, the Pacquiao-Bradley fight, and a lot of other things. Very extensive interview of him discussing with us. And we also gave him a little bit of a praise here, man, of giving us some great, great, great fights. So I think I'll have my co-host back with me. Gabriel, you there? No. I don't know what happened to him, guys, to tell you the truth. Maybe the Belco discussion or Bob Arum pulled him away. Leaving the Ring. Hey, you know, just really quick, I got to ask folks this. And if you can call in and give me your opinion here on Leaving the Ring, 347-205-2598. I'll get back into that question I want to ask the listeners and all the fans out there. But let's get our interview here on Leaving the Ring with Tony the Tiger Thompson. What's up, brother? How you doing, man? You're on live right now with Leaving the Ring.
All right, how you going?
Doing good, man, doing good. So you got your big match coming up now. Rematch, right? This is the rematch.
Most definitely.
Definitely the rematch, you know. And, you know, I got to tell you, I actually like this Tony the Tiger Thompson. To me, you seem more confident, more focused. And I know some folks are going to be like, I don't know. But I saw a little bit of a different person, even when you fought Maurice Harris. And I saw kind of a more of a gutsy kind of want it more bit, where when you face him the first time, it was almost like Tony Thompson still trying to figure out if he really was the Tiger. Am I right or am I wrong?
No, not really. I mean, I think the first time I was just overconfident. I wanted it. I was just a little tad overconfident, believe it or not. You know, even though Vladimir is a great champion, I just knew for all of, you know, gold in the world, I was going to whoop his ass. But it didn't
right.
work out like that. But this time, I think what you see it is a more focused and realistic Tony Thompson. I know what it takes, you know, to be on that championship level. And I'm using that, you know, and everything that I do to bring that to the table this time. So it's not necessarily a guy that wants it more. I mean, I can't want it anymore. This is big. It's changing my life for me, for the American heavyweight landscape, for my family. So I can't want it anymore. I'm just more focused on making sure it comes to fruition this time.
Now you know his power already. So it's not like something you're just going to walk in and go like, well, I really didn't know how hard this guy punched. I didn't really know how good his jab was. To you, is that an added for yourself because you're kind of more prepared and you're more relaxed because you've been there with him and you know exactly what to expect out of him?
Well, I mean, I've never worried about another guy's power. I've knew about his power before because we sparred many rounds together, so that wasn't even an issue. I mean, but obviously being in the ring with the champion gives you that experience. So, you know, you just try to take your experience. If that's anything in life, anything you do, you take your life experience if you try to do better. I'm taking the last fight, even though I lost, I'm taking that experience of being in there with the heavyweight champion of the world, and I'm bringing that to the first fight, to the next fight.
This is Gabe Montoya, Max Boxing, and Leave It in the Ring. Welcome to the show, Tony.
All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome. You and I met actually a long time ago in person. I think it's the only time we've met in St. Lucia for the Andre Ward fight against Roger Cantrell on Showbox.
Mm-hmm.
You and I talked about it then. I mean, it was your dream. This was probably what 2009, I think, was that fight. You had a chance to spar with him. You had a chance to be in with him. This was before. It must have been like, 5 years ago, 2007, because you fought him in 2008. And it was your dream to fight him, and you fought him, and then it went how it went. What did you learn? For one, can you believe that you've come this far, and not only are you fighting him once, but twice, but in that experience with him and sparring and fighting him, have you seen anything that you weren't able to take advantage of that you hoped to this time?
Well, I mean, like I said, I sparred with the guy plenty of rounds, so I knew the things that I could do to be successful against him. I just wasn't able to carry him out for over a 12-round period. So that's the biggest thing. I want to be able to carry out a game plan for 12 rounds if I need to, or at least long enough to, you know, separate him from his senses. I want him to be champion. So, I mean, I know the things that he does well. I know the things that he might could do better, but he masked those things so well. He makes you go through the things he does great to get to the things that he doesn't do as well. So you have to go through the fire in terms of his punching power, his athleticism, his speed, to get to the one thing that, you know, we all want to go in the boxing business. That's his chin. So.
Right. Do you think, you know, everybody talks about that chin. I mean, is it really as bad as you think as people have seen, and he's just changed his style around, kind of like the way Lennox Lewis did, in order to protect it? I mean, that's his weak spot, and he kind of just does everything around that in order to guard it. Do you think it was just a young, inexperienced guy that got caught, by Corey Sanders and then gassed himself out against Lamont Peterson? Or is it that bad?
Well, I mean, we heavyweights, so I don't think anybody's chin is that great. If you get hit right, all of us are go. So I don't subscribe to the fact that he has a poor chin. I subscribe to the fact that he had poor defense at the time, so he changed the defense up, which masked the fact that you don't want to get him 10. I mean, he knocked me down, and everybody wouldn't – I don't think anybody would say I had a weak chin because I've been hit, you know, got big punches, I've gotten up, I've won fights, I've been knocked down in, so you wouldn't subscribe me if you're having a weak chin. But a high-profile guy, he's been knocked out a few people that, you know, you guys being lesser than him, you know, you subscribe that to being a weak chin. That's not true. All of us 200-pound-plus guys, if we catch you in a chin, you'll go. And the guys he's been knocked down by, I mean, let's examine, he's been knocked down by Corey Sanders. Corey Sanders is a huge puncher, even for heavyweight.
Seriously, so, yeah. And fast hands,
right.
Too.
I'm sorry?
And he had fast hands for a heavyweight, too.
Exactly. So it wasn't like he got knocked down, you know, by a guy like a Maurice Harris, you know, who has, you know, little no punching power, or somebody like that. So,
yeah.
Stop laughing
at
me. So, so, it's not like he got, and then when he gassed out, like you said, he gassed out against Lane Booster, not Lamont Pearson, but I'll let you get away with that. But, you know, I mean, that was more of a gas out situation, and, you know,
right.
It's not like he got cold caught by a little flower. He hit me about 200 pound guys.
Did I say Lamont Peterson? Sorry about that. Jeez.
You did. I let it go until it's
I must have Lamont Peterson on my brain. Yeah, Lehman Brewster. Sorry. I actually won $250 on that fight. I should remember his name. I picked Lamont. I had a feeling about it.
Well, I mean, I think it's true when Tony says that, you know, these guys are heavyweights. You know, Chaz Witherspoon, who doesn't have a huge knockout ratio, was able to almost take out, Seth Mitchell. So anything can happen in the heavyweight division, you know, and I think that's why we all tune in and watch.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's definitely right. I mean, I've hit Seth with some hellacious shots in practice. We practice together all the time, and he's taking those shots. And, you know, it's just that right spot, the guy finding the right spot. You can't be buzzed, baby.
Do you think, you know, you're along in your career. I mean, if you win this, it's going to be huge. You bring the title back to America. It's going to change your career, you know, dramatically, change your life dramatically. Do you think that the heavyweight division, that does the sport need like that firebrand guy, that heavyweight to come like Tyson did in order for boxing to survive? Or do you think the sport, because you travel around in your fights, you've seen the world, you've been all around America. Do you believe that we need that guy in order for the sport to go back to where it used to be, or do you think it's going to survive on its own?
Well, I don't think it's gone anywhere. You know, that's, you know, to me, you know, I try to tell people this all the time, that's American arrogance, we think, because there's no American heavyweight,
right.
American boxing is dead. But we continue to do record pay-per-view sales with Mayweather, with Pacquiao, and other guys, you know. No, we don't have an American heavyweight, but we still have good heavyweights out there. Vladimir and Vitaly have been great champions, and they are loved in other parts of the world. So, and even in America, I just went to a fight party over, you know, Steve Francis, one of my buddies, Steve Francis' house, and it was huge. Everybody turned out for a Bradley Pacquiao fight. So, it box is not there, man. Box is not there. But I do think it, the heavyweight division could use a personality in it. You know, being that the Crisco's, they are great champions, but they might, you know, have a personality of a rotten watermelon. So, if you want to give them a flaw, that would be it. But they're great guys, man. And I think if the public took the time enough to get to know them, they probably would like them a little bit more. Because, I mean, how can you go against success?
Well, Tony, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have much personality either, you know.
I've been told I need to liven up a little bit.
You always seem really laid back. We had a good conversation in St. Lucia.
I'm a laid back type of person, and that's naturally me. So I don't have to try hard to be outgoing. That's just my natural personality, and I think. I've hung around Vladimir a few times. Right? Very funny dude, man. Very outgoing. Very funny dude, but, you know, it's just too bad that when he gets in the ring, you know, we all think Drago from the Rocky movies, you know.
Right.
So, you know, and I think if you actually, anybody actually spent time with him, man, he does stupid magic tricks, jokes. I mean, he's a funny dude, man.
Right.
I got to give him that. I mean, just because I want to beat the crap out of that. I mean, I can't tell the world that, you know, he is actually does have personality, man.
Hey, but you know what, though? You're like Clubber Lang, though, man. I've seen you get Clubber Lang on people, too. Chris and I, Oriel, you were calling them out, you know? And I've seen that personality of yourself as well.
Well, I mean, well, you know, a lot of people want to say the best American heavyweight. To me, it's just supposed to be the best heavyweight. But, you know, it gets under my skin when they don't put me in that conversation at all. Like, Chris has done anything so mighty that I haven't accomplished. We both lost our only title shot. We've both beaten pretty much everybody else that's been in front of us. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't get the fascination with, you know, having Chris rank so high above me and all the situations. So I'm like, you know, let's prove it. If you really think you're better than me and if your handlers really think you're better than me, get your ass in the ring. I'll do it.
Right.
But he knows his handlers would not do something like that. His handlers know better. Which is why they never let me and him fight, because we had to. He had a promoter that we could work with real easy. They had TV, so there was no reason why me and him could never hook up.
You know, it seemed like back in the past when the guys that beat Vladimir Klitschko got reckless. You know, even Corey Sanders to Lamon Brewster, but everybody else has been trying to get technically sound with them because they're very sound in their boxing skills. Is that a flaw that most fighters have been doing with him, or do you gotta be reckless? Do you gotta just say, you know what, I gotta go for it, and I just gotta go for broke, no matter what, from first all the way down? What do you think?
I don't think those guys were being technical. I think they were being scared. I mean, let's just be reasonable. Who do you think was in there looking very technically sound against him and lost? Nobody. They were just scared. the other guys that beat him, like you said, they were records. They knew it was the heavyweight championship of the world, and they went all out. And I think that's part of the way to beat him. You can be reckless, but you have to be responsibly reckless. And I think that's the way to beat him. You have to realize the heavyweight championship of the world, and I'm going to go out there and I'm going to put it all out there. The other guys that you're describing, you're describing chickens. They're not describing boxers. They're describing chickens. They're just calling what they were.
Woo! Well, there you go.
Wow. Wow. That kind of stunned me. Let's talk about the fight itself. Do you think, you know, you're going obviously over into his home territory. Is the thought always, I mean, you're not, I mean, it's Switzerland, but, you know, it's a Klitschko fight. They're not going to be neutral. Do you have to knock him out in order to win?
I don't think I have to knock him out in order to win. I think the judges will be partial. I've gotten decisions over, you know, until I knock the guys out. I've been ahead on scorecard. And I think you can't go over there and, like you said, sit back and pity pat and hope to get the decision. I think you can get the decision if you are truly the aggressor and win the fight. I don't think I'll have any problem. I mean, I want to knock his ass out. He stopped me at 11. I need to stop him before the 11th. So that's my game plan, to go over there and knock him out. But if he doesn't get knocked out, he's going to get beat up so bad that I think I'll definitely get a decision. It won't be in question. I really can't say that. I've seen that damn Pacquiao Bradley fight. So,
yeah. What are your thoughts there? I mean, we've been talking. We had Shane Mosley on right before you.
That was crazy. I was so sure Pacquiao had swept all 15 rounds. I left right like at the beginning of the 12th round. I mean, the guys called me and said Bradley won. I thought they were just trying to tease me for leaving early. So.
Wow. Yeah, I was actually getting up from press row. I was like, well, you know, they were about to announce the decision. I'm like, I'm going to pack my stuff, get back to start writing my story. And then the score happened. I was like, wow. The whole crowd was like, it was literally a collective, like, what the hell? You know?
Did they really mean to
save
Bradley?
What's that?
I think the crowd was thinking, did they really mean to save Bradley?
Yeah, seriously. You
right.
know, it was like, yeah.
Did Pacquiao change his last name? What happened?
Right, exactly, yeah.
A very weird night in Vegas, you know, it was a really weird night. But last thing, you know, I'm just curious, you know, the before it didn't seem like you completely used the southpaw to an advantage. I mean, it's always been hard for people to handle southpaws. Do you think, I mean, it's just the nature of your style, you're a little more aggressive, or do you think it was that Klitschko's figured out how to deal with southpaws? Can you make that more work for you since the southpaw has knocked him out before?
Oh, I definitely think I can make it work for me. It's like I said, it's executing a game plan. We have a game plan. I think it's very solid and sound. And I think the only difference is, you know, we have a better Tony Thompson to try to execute the game plan. So I definitely think my southpaw stance is going to give him a whole hell of a lot of problems. So I'm really looking forward to the fight.
I'm excited to see you get a second opportunity and, you know, see these guys and get pushed to the limit just a little bit. I think they're the two of the best fighters in the world, certainly, and if you beat them, I think you join those ranks. And I wish you all luck in the world.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you, Tony, man. Appreciate you coming on Leaving the Ring.
No problem. All right, have a great one, man. Good night.
Hey, you too. All right, man. Take care.
Well, there you go. Tony the Tiger Thompson going to be facing Vladimir Klitschko. Rematch for himself, and he's ready to go. He is ready to go. We got a lot of callers here on Leaving the Ring. We're going to go back with Avery, though, who had a question, and we're going to answer it here on Leaving the Ring. If you want to call in, 347-215-7598, let's open up the phone lines. Let's talk some boxing here. 3 hours of boxing talk here on Leaving the Ring about our beloved blue-collar sport for the blue-collar man. Let's go back with Avery. What's up, brother? You're back on live again, and Gabe wanted to answer that question and stuff, you know, that you had asked earlier. Gabe? Go ahead. You know, remind us really quick. What was the question? I forgot.
I was asking about like why they would, of all people, rob Pacquiao. I'm not expecting to rob Bradley, but I mean,
right?
Why would they rob Pacquiao? Was there an invested interest in Bradley? I mean, that was kind of the question.
Well, I think let's just be, you know, theoretical about it. Because like I said, I'm not calling Bob Arum a thief. I'm not going to, you know, cry conspiracy. But if I was going to do that, let's say that. I had Manny Pacquiao. He's in his 60th fight. Obviously, he's not going to go too many more. He's already said he wants to retire at the end of 2012, and he actually extended it one fight. That's what Bodram told me. That it was actually for several years. That's been Manny's plan, was to retire at the end of 2012. But then, like, I think it was last year, he told Bob, I'd like to add, like, one more fight, and we'll do it, and you'll promote it the beginning of 2013, somewhere in there.
Okay.
So they're extended. That whatever Teddy was talking about, I mean, I asked Bob about it specifically. So did Steve Karp. We were at the Wild Card for the media day, and we talked about it extensively. I have the audio. So... But if I was in control of this fight and I fixed it in order to rob a huge star like Manny Pacquiao, this would be my reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
You've just signed a young guy in Tim Bradley, and you need to build up.
He's been underpromoted.
Mm-hmm.
He needs this big boost. So you put him on 24/7. You do the big fight after putting him on before that, and you go into the rematch. Manny can, you know, he could do, let him do whatever he wants to do, let the judges score it fairly in the rematch, but we got to get to that rematch. So maybe they do, now that the product's been damaged because the fight, everybody thinks it was one-sided for Manny and he got robbed, maybe you do a co-feature, put Bradley on that, he takes somebody out, a little bit of goodwill and trust is brought back, Manny maybe knocks somebody out too. And then you do the rematch, and you make tons of money. My model for this has always been a bit of a theory. I don't know if your radio is on. I'm hearing an echo.
Oh, no, it's not on.
I don't hear an echo. Go ahead. Keep going, though.
I keep hearing an echo. My phone's being crazy, though. So I've always looked back at, like, the De La Hoya Trinidad, and everybody says that was a robbery, and they always blame Don King because he's the obvious guy, right?
Right.
So
I've never
thought about it. Go back to history. Oscar was talking about retiring, like 30. He was like 28 at the time. His career got extended by that law for several years. You know, he took off to his own promoter, and he extended it even further. Who stood more to gain from that, his promoter or Don King? So I apply that same theory to this fight, and it kind of speaks for itself. Like, again, I'm not accusing anybody of anything, but... If you were going to rig it, that would be a reason, and that would be why.
I got one more question. You guys think that because Tim Bradley, because he's an American fighter. Oh, excuse me. I have one more question. Do you think because Tim Bradley is an American, they're looking for that next big American star to kind of promote and, you know?
I'm not sure. I mean,
I heard nothing but that going.
He said that he think that with Tim Bradley being an American fighter, they're trying to build an American star with this.
Well, if we go back to that theory, yes. The answer is yes.
I think so, yeah, because the fact that, like I said, I was going to say earlier, was that he's clean cut. He speaks, you know, speaks very well. And he has a good story to back up everything. You know, he's got a hardship. Here's a guy that really had a fight to get where he's at. So there is a good storyline, you know. But at the same time, even going into the Manny Pacquiao, even before going into the Manny Pacquiao fight, here's a guy that was not a likable guy. For some reason, fans just didn't connect with him, you know. And I think that's why there's more of an outcry right now of the decision than anything else, because fans from the beginning didn't connect with them. Unless you were a Timothy Bradley guy, you know, unless you follow him. I follow Timothy Bradley. I mean, this is how much I follow Timothy Bradley. He was the second guy on my the second show I had for Leaving the Ring, which debuted 4 years ago. He was my first guest. You know?
I believe they're going to try to, you know, in the rematch, they're going to try to do their best to vilify Tim Bradley and turn everybody against them again. You know how that
absolutely. It's
going to
sell.
You know,
that's what sells, you know?
Yeah.
And it's really sad, because even though I think we're all in an agreement that he didn't win that fight, but
I agree.
The price that he has to pay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, money doesn't heal everything. It's not going to heal, you know, it's not going to heal up the what he's got to live through. You know, and what his trainers got to go through and stuff. So that's the sucky part. Avery, thanks, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold because we got a lot of calls right now here on Leave the Ring.
Staying on, though. I appreciate it. You too, man.
You want to call in 347-215-7598 here on Leave the Ring. You can speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or Gabriel Montoya. You have to get through Mr. David Chen here on Leave the Ring. We're going to go down the line for the people that have been holding. Okay, just to make it fair. So we're going to go with CT, who wants to talk. Pacquiao, Bradley, and Randall Bailey. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing tonight?
Doing good, brother. How you doing?
Doing very well.
I'm doing okay. First off, I want to talk about the Pacquiao-Bradley fight. I'm a huge Bradley fan. I like Pacquiao also. I understand everybody's going crazy about, you know, because it's Pacquiao, but what about giving a little bit of credit to Timothy Bradley that night? This guy had an injured foot, and, you know, Bradley couldn't put him away with a messed up leg. You know what I mean? The guy fought his heart out. He tried the best he could. I had an 8-4 for Pacquiao, maybe, you know, best 7-5, just because it all depends on, like, what the judges look at. I mean, Bradley just didn't just get hit in the face and just, like, back up and, you know, stumble all across the ring. He actually threw punches back. You know, the guy tried. So, I mean, I don't know what the judges probably saw, but that could be a little bit what they saw. I mean, they saw this guy. I mean, I saw what you saw, Dave. For instance, I just saw a straight left hand coming through all the time. It's not like Pacquiao was bringing the Pacquiao of old, doing those combinations that were, you know, blistering combinations that would overwhelm Bradley. I saw a lot of punches being missed, blocked, glanced off of Bradley's glove or, you know, arm. But, I mean, things like this happen, you know, in sports. It's not the first time, and it's not going to be the last. You know, if I could, can I just give a list of the, you know, numbers of fights that I've seen this done before? Like, I've seen it done with Claudio Santillo. You know,
there you go.
Marquez and Pacquiao. I was there, actually, at the Fredo Kendo and Chris Bird fight. I thought Kendo won that fight. Sturm and De La Hoya, Chavez and Whitaker. I even go back to, you know, Doug Jones versus Muhammad Ali. I don't know if you guys remember that fight.
Yeah, I have that fight.
Yeah. I mean, it goes on and on. Williams, Laura, Lewis, Holyfield, you know, Santa Cruz, Castellanos, Tarver, Jones won. I mean, it happens. People just got to understand. Honestly, my true opinion, I think if Pacquiao fights the same way in the second fight, with Bradley having both of his feet healthy, I think Bradley beats him convincingly the second fight. That's just my opinion.
I'm with you on that one. And I know some folks are going to be like, what? No, wait. A few people got kind of upset because I put out there, I was like, I don't know if it's just me, but I keep going back. Manny don't look the same to me.
Right.
You know, I mean, when he did open up with combinations, he maybe landed one or two. Now, also, too, the whole Manny's got power. Really? I mean, he could have out. He couldn't, you know what I mean? And he got, I mean, Bradley's, you could clearly see his leg, his ankle just spun all over the place on that, well, I think it was the fifth or sixth round. And guess what? This guy had two bad legs, and Pacquiao still couldn't take him out. Got to get off of the whole fact that Pacquiao's got one-punch knockout power. He doesn't. He knocked out a Ricky Hatton who had a questionable jaw from the beginning. He beat down a Cotto. You know, I mean, this whole he's got one punch. He does it. He has to put a volume of beating on a guy. And even with Bradley, he had problems, man. He had some problems there, you know. But does still take away. He did win this fight. But I still kind of see there's not that real mental edge. He came in at 150-something. That's got to tell you something.
Mm.
You know, he looked a little soft in the beginning. Either he comes in and blows out Timothy Bradley in the rematch and just kind of shows he's got to rededicate himself, or the outcome is going to be exactly how you just mentioned it right now. You know?
Yeah, and I also think, you know, with one bad leg, Bradley still, to an extent, made an adjustment in the second half of the fight. I mean, I definitely think in a rematch, I like the way Bradley does make adjustments in fights. And I think, you know, with his leg being healthy, I think he beats Pacquiao again. if I could, I'd like to ask you guys a question about, you know, I've seen the Bailey and Mike Jones fight. I like the what George Foreman said a few years ago. I forgot what fight it was, but he mentioned, you know, when you fight a puncher, fighters have what is called muscle tension, you know, knowing that you're fighting a hard puncher. And I think that's what the case happened to Mike Jones. He's very tentative when he punched. He didn't, you know, follow through with his shots as much. And where do you guys rate Randall Bailey's punching power? I mean, I don't want to go all crazy about this guy because of this knockout, but do you rate him up there as far as like a hard puncher like a Julian Jackson or Ernie?
You know
Davis?
What? Yeah, I was going to say that. He kind of does remind me. He's got that hawk kind of turn around type of punch, man. I mean, there's
but
no
he's
way.
He's also got like he's got a great like technique with it. I watched that right hand over and over and over again last night, and it is just, if I wanted to show somebody, this is the way you knock somebody down or out with a right hand, you would just show them that first, that 10th round knockdown. It was perfect. It was just perfect. It just went straight through his face. It went into his shoulder. It just shoved him down. It knocked him off of his feet onto his back and about knocked him out right there. I mean, some referees might have waved it off right there. I mean, I don't know where I rate it, but it was like an Ernie Shavers kind of, you know, you just hit him and you're done. But he's old and he looks like an old sniper. You know, he's got to really like measure exactly where it's going to go and wait for that moment. I was more impressed by the uppercut or equally impressed by the uppercut because he just waited and he waited and let this kid get, you know, I was there and the fight was not good, you know, and after a while, it took the boo birds came out, and I think that Randall was new as an experienced fighter. The kid's going to start stepping it up and going for it in a way that is going to play into my hands. And sure enough, Mike Jones started stepping up. He's probably listening to the crowd a little bit. He stepped back, and boom, you're knocked out. That's it.
I thought Mike Jones came in with just a terrible game plan. You know, I mean, he didn't really use a whole lot of nothing. You know, I mean, didn't establish anything. Yeah, I mean,
I think he's down to make one. I've said it for three fights of Mike Jones since that Jesus Soto Carrasco fight. I think the first one. He's not a 147. He's a 54 that they just kept down there because he invested so much time in getting him a ranking. His body matured, and I think they made a mistake of keeping him down there. And I don't think we've seen the best of Mike Jones in full. Like muscle tension, I think the lack of commitment you're seeing is a guy that's not sure of himself at 147, and he knows he's compromised, and so he's holding off a little bit. I think that's what you're seeing.
Well, compromise of diet as well. You know what I mean? Not being confident, but diet too. I mean, if you can't make a weight and you're having difficulties making that weight, and you're heavy topped, there could be a whole lot more to it. You know, where that muscle tension kicks in, the fatigue of legs, and you know, the chin as well. You know, you can weaken your chin in a lot of ways.
Your punch resistance, right? Yeah,
exactly. You know, CT, I'm going to put you back in a hole, brother. Thanks for calling in, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah, you lose all that water in your brain, and yeah, you take shots a lot less, just not quite as well as you would if you're fully hydrated. I mean, remember, like, Trinidad, for years, was killing himself to make 147. I've always contended this, and I know I'm an apologist, but he jumped up to 154. They were trying to get him to Terry Norris. That was the plan. And he did one fight at 154. Norris got knocked out. That fight was over. And so they moved back down trying to get the Oscar De La Hoya fight. I think they were even going to do Quarte, but then he got sick or something happened there. They were actually going to make that fight, which I always wanted to see. And I always think that that was like the second career of Trinidad at 147 when he returned, because he still had that prodigious power. The combination punches, the quickness, the snap that he had wasn't quite there. And I don't think De La Hoya fought the best Tito that he could have. We saw it happen when Tito moved up to 154 again, and all of a sudden he was a little bit rejuvenated, and he was just he tore through three fighters in that division into brutal-ass fights. But you could see he still had it. 160, he slowed down because of the weight, and he also met one of the greatest fighters of all time in Bernard Hopkins, who had his ass kicked. But thinking of weight, you look at it, you can see it in the legs. Look at Mike Jones's legs. They're like toothpicks, dude.
He's not supposed
to be at 147. He's taller than I am. I can make 147 easy, but I'm 5'9". This guy's like 5'11". It's it's, you know, no. If you see him in person, he's not a small man.
Right.
You know, he probably could blow up to 160 and be okay.
You know, I'm going to throw out my theory, too, with the whole Pacquiao and Bradley, why this kind of kicked off and what happened here, you know. And, you know, and leading up to that pay-per-view event, if you pay for it, it starts like at 4:30, and what they do, they basically now put on all the 24/7. So I had a chance to check them all out, right? You know, getting ready and watching the undercards and then going back and just checking out the 24/7. And I got to tell you this, man, the whole Godly thing, and this was my question. Am I wrong for thinking this? But when a guy has a projector and he's got a picture of himself saying soul, spiritual, and all this other things, that's like asking for trouble, you know? I mean, what if it was God himself, man, that just brought him back down to earth saying, dude, you're not a disciple. I mean, you're not a prophet. You don't have disciples. You need to get out. I mean, because I just thought it was weird, Gabe, where, I don't know if you watched it, where he has a Bible study, and he's like, okay, everybody change to Ezekiel number, blah, blah, blah. And he starts preaching and, you know, doing scriptures and whatnot. And then after that, he's like, okay, who wants to go shoot guns? And he's at a shooting range. Like, what the? I mean, how do you go from there to that? And that just makes no sense to me. You know what I mean? If you're going to, God doesn't accept you shooting guns, and even as a hobby. And it just makes no sense. But, and that's just my warped mind. I just thought that was hilarious. I thought it was funny. Same thing with, like, you know, going to jail, and the dude's already saying he's dehydrated, it's unhumane. Dude, it's jail. It's not supposed to be humane. It's not supposed to, you know, they're not supposed to accommodate you. And I said this from the beginning. I don't know if you remember, Gabriel. I said, this is a big punishment, because when you take away his little silver spoon, everything else, you're going to find out what is really in the man. You're going to really find out where this man really stands. And I've said this to many folks. The way he portrays himself, his attitude, is really, there's a cry inside. There's a child inside that needs help. And he's been through a whole lot, seeing his father, you know, and, you know, the women beating in his life. There's something there in that kid's head that he needs some fixing. And sitting in a jail cell may not help him, but it's going to give him a second view, a second outlook of how the world really does spin around, because the way he's been functioning was not right. And I still think 90 days or 88, 7, whatever days, it's still not enough, especially when you have regular Joes like myself or anybody else out there. When you do a crime, you end up doing the real time, not the money time. But we're going to patch in some fight fans. Go ahead, brother.
Well said.
Let's patch in some fight fans here. And, you know, I'm going to tell you real quick, too, man, just to throw this out there. There's a really good show out there. And I never, every time I think I want to, you know, talk about it, I never have a chance. And the host is on with us, man. The Boxing Report is Eric Dragonstyle. This kid, I really liked the way he you know, breaks down fights. I really like his show. It's a really good show. I catch it on podcasts. I never catch it live. And you want to talk about putting in work. He came from the YouTube community along with myself. And this kid's put in a lot of work on his craft. And I just got to applaud him, man. Eric, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring, brother.
Hey, man. What's up? What's going on, guys?
Nothing, man. I'm just talking here boxing. You want Chavez versus Lee, which is happening this week, man. What's going on? What's your thoughts and what's your breakdown, and who do you think is going to take it?
You know, I got Chavez winning. I think he's going to outwork Lee. I think Lee could be a little tentative at times, although it's going to be interesting to see how Chavez reacts when Lee, and I believe he is going to crack him with a solid punch. He just says, because Chavez's defense isn't all that. But if Chavez could take Lee's best punch, Lee's in big trouble. And I'm not the biggest Chavez fan out there, but to me that's just the truth. But, you know, the reason I wanted to call in was, you know, when the tickets went on sale, I didn't know this, and probably I should have, but I buy the tickets and no alcohol. I mean,
what? No alcohol?
No beer, no alcohol. You can't drink at the fight. And to me, that's why the tickets haven't sold. We sold 10,000 as of yesterday. And, you know, which is actually good, by the way. Fernando Vargas didn't sell 10,000 when he came to El Paso.
You know, so it's not that bad. You know, it's not DeLoya numbers, but it's not that bad. And 10,000 was pulled out the Don Haskins Center. You know, so it you could argue it was probably the right venue. So I'm expecting about 20,000 maybe, you know, because it is a last-minute town. That's just the way Mexicans are. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But I'm just upset about the no beer, man, and I think it's insulting.
It is
they're
insulting.
They're giving no reason for it.
That is, you know, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's a setup that Chavez is going to lose, and they don't want people to go ballistic. Who knows? Since everybody's into conspiracy and theories and stuff right now, there's one out there right now. They don't want to see beer bottles or actually, you know, or beer cans being flying over in the ring. I don't know. Go ahead, Gabe.
What's the medical marijuana policy out there?
Oh, marijuana is illegal here. This is Texas. Oh,
okay.
So.
Just checking.
Highly Republican.
You know, I'm curious. You know that number? I think it was like 60,000 that De La Hoya did against Carpentier, right? I mean, he did massive attendance. I wonder if is that the highest of the modern guys? Has anybody even come? I don't think anybody's come close to that. Pacquiao, what did he do? 50,000 in Texas?
Yeah, but it, in fairness, about 3/4 of them were women. But yes, close to 60,000.
Three-quarters of anything being women is not a problem, as far as I'm concerned.
Right. But, you know, he had that fan base, though, you know what I mean? But,
right.
Yeah, I mean, I think 20,000 is actually good. I mean, like I said, the Don Haskins Center here doesn't hold that many, you know. So, in a way, it is the right venue if they wanted to have over 10,000. But I just think it's hurt. I mean, they have an event here called Music Under the Stars, and it's just amateur, you know, music artists, you know what I mean? Up and comers that just play and people go out there and they have fun. They pick their own beer, you know?
Right.
It's 30,000 show up. One year, the politicians got smart and said, we're not going to allow beer, no alcohol. 3,000 people showed up.
Wow.
And so, well, that's a huge difference to me. So, you could definitely argue that no alcohol has affected it. Now, the city did say, you know, while you may own the stadium, the University of Texas, who make this decision, the chancellor, but we own the parking lot, so they are going to allow tailgating. You know, BYOB could take your own beer, can have a tailgate up to 11 p.m. at night. I don't think that makes up for it, but I guess it helps, you know, and I saw it in the news earlier, so I guess that's good. You know, train till, I guess, the fight starts or something, and then after the fight, but I mean, this city has absolutely no history of any riots. It has no history of any hardcore violence. It's one of the safest cities in the world. Some person out there, I don't know, Houston or Austin, made this decision, and I think it's a travesty.
Yeah, it's not a fight without some brewskis in hand and stuff, man. That's that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Where is the mainstream media outrage about this? It is kind of weird, not to make light of it. I think it is kind of...
It is kind of weird.
It's an innate need for all of us to alter our consciousness, and that's what we're all doing with beer. I know all the other drugs are illegal, pot and hallucinogens and cocaine and all those things, and that's a whole issue for a whole different show. But it is, obviously, like, you take away somebody's beer... You know, like nobody gets mad that they take away people's medical marijuana. Like, it's illegal in your state. But you take away a guy's beer, and people are going to be outraged. And I just think it's an odd thing to try to do prohibition. It's never worked. I understand they're a little bit concerned. I don't know. If they're concerned about overlap, people getting upset, or, like, they didn't want to do it because of the drug war and there was ties to Chavez's people, how about fix those problems, you know? That way we don't be a problem. Instead of taking everybody's beer away. I don't know. It's a weird issue. It's a weird thing.
I would just probably just get my tickets back and say, screw that, I'll watch it at home where I can keep cracking open a beer here and there and stuff, man. That just makes no sense, bro. Hey, Eric, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for the time, guys.
Thank you, man.
Well, then keep it on going and stuff. You want to call in 347-205-7598. We still got two scheduled interviews, so we do have some room to talk boxing here. 3 hours of boxing talk on Leave the Ring. Saul Alvarez Canelo Alvarez, got a scheduled date with Victor Ortiz, which Ortiz has a scheduled date with Josecito Lopez. Now, some folks thinking it's a big diss, or is it a... You know, it's kind of weird. I mean, just thinking about everything, you know, what's been going on. It is weird, but at the same time, I'm not really mad about the whole Canelo Ortiz, but the thing is that if he does lose to Josecito Lopez, which a lot of people are not picking Lopez to pull the upset, but there is that given chance. That's why we watch boxing, because we do want to see an upset or the underdog come up. And so there's a chance that he could lose. Ortiz still gets the Canelo fight, and it kind of leaves me with Gabe. I was talking to a few folks, and they were like, how does that make any sense? He's came off of a loss, but yet he still keeps getting these. I don't know if it was with you I was talking to you about it. You know, he still keeps getting these big payday fights. It's almost not really fair when you get a guy like Josecito Lopez who's not even given a godly chance to win in this fight, and if he does pull it off, shouldn't he be getting he have the eye on the prize, and he's not really being suggested?
I thought it was really incredibly disrespectful to do that announcement. I know they need to fill that spot September 15th, but it just seemed like, you know, we all kind of know the deal already, and people are pointing at Top Rank and saying, you know, look how fixed they are. They want to do the rematch, but like, this is kind of rude to Josecito Lopez, who did give a good account of himself against Jesse Vargas, who's always been a quality fighter. He upset, you know, Mike Dallas, who's a quality fighter, and getting more quality all the time. I think down the road that win's going to mean something. I think Mike could end up getting a title if he stays on the track he is with Virgil Hunter. So I don't understand why they would mention it, you know, but only they know. And it'll be, I guess, I'm glad they mentioned it now, because now there's an even greater microscope on the Ortiz-Lopez fight, you know. I mean, he should, you know, if he's that quality of a guy, that he's a, you know, good enough to fight Floyd and feels that he can beat him in a rematch, they think he can be competitive and beat Canelo, then he should beat Josecito. He's got more power than him. He's, you know, probably more of a natural 147, although Josecito's a pretty big guy. I think it's great motivation for Josecito. I think he's got a really good chance to win. I think he can outbox and be crafty like Herrera. He has a really good chance. But it's almost like saying, this dude doesn't have a chance to win because we're going to do a pay-per-view. It's a little, not shady, but disrespectful.
Yeah. I had a chance to talk to, you know, Henry Ramirez. He called me up and kind of told me what was going down. What was the, you know, and I got to tell you that I went like, what? Like three times. Like, what? Wait, what? What? And I didn't even, you know, and he was like, it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me. But in some ways, it's got to bother you. You know, it's like that's like really looking past through your fighter. You know?
Yeah.
That's like basically saying, well, that's the reason why we signed you on, Josecito, was to lose. You're not an opponent. You're a lost opponent already. And
yeah,
if
like you're a gimme.
Boy, yeah, you know you're a, if anything, and this is the dumb part of promoters sometimes. Okay, is that if you wanted to give a guy an added motivation, you don't go about by basically saying he's nobody, because now you've added even more to him to say, I'm going to beat this guy. I'm going to beat him. And you're going to be left with another stump. And stump after stump, I mean, stump after stump that Golden Boy's been doing, dude, they got a forest. They got a forest of stuff. And they I don't know, man. They're playing with matches. In my opinion, it's just kind of weird.
You're like grasping at straws. I mean, they've taken some hits this year, and you know, you got to praise them for being that company that did all the extra testing. And I mean, it wasn't their idea. It was Floyd's idea, though. You know, and they wanted to be in the Floyd business, and that's part of the Floyd business, and so they did it, and they continue to do it. I'm not really sure why they did the Canelo and Shane Mosley testing. That's probably a question I'll ask him in private, how that all went down. I find that interesting. I know some things that were going around at the time, and there was inquiries being made about VADA from certain parties. that I find interesting. But, like, again, this is more stuff I'm going to write later on. So I'm going to praise him in that sense. But then, you know, and then they lost these fights and they had to put them back together. That's why I understand that. And they were kind of, you know, September 15th, they want to lock that down. But at the same time, they don't
but
really need
other
that date.
They
want that date. And they're making it's
right.
a pay-per-view date. It's not like it's a TV date that are hard to come by. I mean, it's a Showtime pay-per-view date on September 15th. Showtime doesn't generally do pay-per-views. So I understand you want to do a show on that date. But Bob Arum's doing a show, and he already knows, you know, what he's going to be doing that date. These guys can be running up against each other. And is it about you guys or is it about the sport? It's like the way I look at Richard Schaefer not talking to me or Keith Kaiser not talking to me or Luda Bella not talking to me because of the things that I've written with PEDs or the hard questions I ask. It's not your sport. It's all of ours.
Exactly.
So how dare you? How dare you treat me this way, a guy that's trying to do good for the sport? And I'm not saying it's about me because what I'm doing is about the sport. It's about the fighters. It's about health and safety. So when these guys do pay-per-views on the same day, I have to ask you, do you even give a shit about the fans? Is it really just about your bottom line? And that was just a nice sales pitch that I want to clean up the sport or that this is for the betterment of the sport or we care about the fans or what Richard Schaefer used to refer to them as, the consumer, until somebody told him he probably should change that word for fans, and now he uses the word fans. And that history is will prove me right. You can go back and find him using the term consumer. I don't know if they care. It's just, you know, just product to them on some level. So I know it's a bit of a tangent, but
well, it's sad
wonder,
too the way they. It's almost sad too that not only with the word consumer, they basically treat their fighters almost in that fashion. I mean, Victor Ortiz, going against Canelo.
Well,
I'm pretty sure he knows that he's also you're in Josecito's position. You're not an opponent. You're a gimme because there's a lot of other credible names out there that should be fighting, should have that September 15th date with Saul Canelo Alvarez. And one of them is under the banner or has fought under the banner of Golden Boy, Erislandy Lara. So That's what kind of comes down to being pretty sad. Let's patch in some fight fans here on Leaving the Ring. If you want to call in 347-215-7598, you certainly can. Speak to myself, Dave Duenas, or my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. You got to get through our producer, Mr. David Chen. Be sure to catch The Boxing Fix every Sunday night at 5 Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern, and Noche de Boxeo on Monday night at the same times as the times I just mentioned right now. And pick up your Undisputed Fight magazine. You pick up your May issue, you get your June. The June issue will be out tomorrow. So let's get Josh, who wants to talk. Pacquiao Bradley, what's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
What's going on, fellas? How's everything going, man?
Doing good, brother. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Just chilling here, man. Hey, so look, I was thinking about it on that pay-per-view card we just saw. We got a blowout or a mismatch, an upset, and disappointment, and then a bad decision. Damn, our sport is awesome. That's why we love boxing so much. We're always entertained.
I know, we had like a weird ending in the Lawrence fight.
Right.
You know, though, I didn't expect – well, I don't think people expected Tian Kennedy to get blown out the way he does. Everybody was calling Ligondiao Mr. Boring. But – and I you know what? I'm not a bandwagoner. I've been on the Ligondiao bandwagon
right.
since the very beginning. And I've always said he's going to be very good. He's going to be a problem. And he went through Tian Kennedy, who's a solid fighter. Maybe not like – obviously not a world beater, but he's a very solid fighter. And, man, I mean, Rigo just went through him like a hot knife through butter. And it pisses me off that this bad decision kind of overshadowed that. That was a hell of a performance, in my opinion.
It was. It was a hell of a performance. And I got to tell you that the guy that, I mean, he's technically sound. And what makes him scary is that he's a counterpuncher with a lot of power. I mean,
a lot of power.
You know, and I don't blame a lot of these guys. They're just like kind of looking at him like, I'm not going to do it right now. The other thing that's scary is his record. This guy hasn't been around very long. And he's making a huge statement, you know, and that statement, it keeps dropping guys left and right. I don't know what other statement you can make. That's just the statement right there where you just go, wow.
He knows he needs to be exciting. That's the fun thing to watch about Rico, and so he's doing it. He's like, all right, you want me to knock people out? You just want me to be entertaining, you know, American-style fighter? You know, I'm going to still use my footwork, which is, I think, the best in the sport. And I'm going to keep my range, and I'm going to knock fools out with my left hand. That's just the deal. And I just find it intriguing to watch, you know. But the RC fight, I mean, it was buzzkill because I thought it was going to be a good fight. It was, like, good, like, you know, round in a couple seconds. I didn't hold it against him not fighting on. He looked legitimately hurt to me. And that's a dude that has fought through some serious pain. I've been ringside for a few of his fights. I don't doubt him at all.
I thought it was ridiculous with a lot of people I was seeing on Twitter because, unfortunately, I missed that fight because, you know, I'm at a fight party and everyone wanted to watch the playoff game, you know. So I missed that fight, and I'm reading on Twitter what happened, and I'm seeing people saying, oh, Arce's a punk, or he can't, you know, he's bitching out in the fight. I was like, man, you guys are saying that. Arce has never bitched out, man. That guy's a warrior. That's something that you can't slander a dude like that, man.
Yeah, it's the guy's given his body, like, repeatedly for the fans. Bloody face. You know, it's always a tough fight with Jorge Arce. I mean, he drops the guy fast. Even this is like a microcosm of every one of his fights. Drops the guy fast, the guy comes back, starts hurting him. You know, he gets dropped in the second round. It's like just unbelievable. You know, I think if fans walk up those steps, even if it's your local gym, take some punches to the face, and then you'll know exactly how hard it is. You know, because it's just – and I hate to pull that card. Quillen pulled that card on me last week. But sometimes you – know, and I didn't argue with him because – he didn't know what the hell he was talking about in regards to my life and how I live it. So I just, we're not going to dignify it. But I would suggest to people take a punch to the face sometime. And really not even do that. How about just get in the ring and have somebody, like, stalk you for three rounds and throw punches at you, and you just try to keep away and not be freaking exhausted. Then come back and question a guy like Corey Arthur.
Exactly. And
then we got the worst fight of all time with a great ending in the Bailey fight. That was a horrible fight, though.
Hey, one other thing, man. Shout out to Eric, you know, D-Cell, my boy. Man, I couldn't be in Texas. I can't go to a fight without beer, man. I don't know how they're doing that, dude. That's wrong. Hey, I know they're all for the death penalty out there, but that's
right.
The death penalty to boxing fans in general right there. No beer at a boxing fight? Come on,
I know, man. I know. Yeah, it's – Jesus.
So yeah, man,
it's just not right. It's not American.
No, it's not.
Horrible.
You know, you gotta have some fire water at the fights. There's just no way you can't have any fire water at the fights, man.
Yeah,
hey,
especially John, at a Texas fight.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, seriously, I mean, I don't understand. We still got 3 minutes. I mean, we got Danny Jacobs waiting. He's in the bullpen, but I think it's. I don't even know what to say about it. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever heard of. No beer at a fight. Man,
that's like saying you can't cheer at the fight.
Well, now I know why Steve Kim decided to go to the fights in Newark instead of in El Paso. That dude was like, there's going to be no beer at the fight? I'm going to go to Newark, you know? So he'll be having the goose.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume that if they don't have any beer, they don't have any goose, and that's what Steve drinks. So he's going to be in Newark.
No way. You want to see me? Catch me dead there.
You know the fans, though, in Texas are going to sneak in beer, though, man. Eric said it perfectly, man. You know, Mexicans can't go without beer.
You know how many Mexicans are going to be at this fight? They're going to be like, what? That's local, man. I'm going in with some brewskis. Yeah, try to stop a Mexicanos. They're going to try to bring in their 12ers and their ice chests and stuff. You know, and if anything, this is what they're going to do. They're going to have their kids sneaking in for them because you know they're going to – don't worry about it, mijo. Just put it underneath your arm. We'll get it in and stuff. Hey, John, thanks for calling in, brother. I'm going to put you back on hold, man. All
right, man. Always great.
So like 10,000 people collapse from lack of beer.
Yeah, exactly. How come there's no cheering? How come there's no cheering in this boxing event? Because nobody's having a good time because there's no beer. That is really...
That's insane.
Yeah, I just can't. I can't. I mean, how do you enjoy yourself? That's the whole purpose of going to a fight, you know, a live fight. If you're going to pay for it, I mean, how are you being told you can't do something when you're paying your hard work earned money to go relax and sit down and watch a fight and being told, no, you can't drink. There is no drinking allowed. Are you serious? There's just, forget about it. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. We got Danny Jacobs and John Molina Jr. Then he'll be joining us here on Leaving in the Ring. Let's take in a caller right now really quick before we get Danny Jacobs with us here live on Leaving in the Ring. Gino wants to ask Gabriel about his weekend HBO show. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, what up, guys? Yeah, I was wondering about that. Is that a true story? You're going to be on that Jim Lampley show?
What's that? Oh, no, it's not. I wasn't going to be on it. They were going to do a segment on PEDs, and I think Victor Conte was actually going to be a guest. I haven't heard yet if he's been completely bumped. I know they were down to the segment was down to like 2.5 minutes or something. And they were going to do a quick interview with Victor, but I think now the show is just going to be wall to wall this bad decision and scoring and boxing, which, you know, it is what it is.
I hear you. Okay, I was just wondering because that would have been interesting to watch.
Well,
all right, man.
You know. I was hoping that Victor would Victor was the guy. I was on the short list to be on the guests but I think as the segment went from like 6.5 minutes down to like 2.5, they went with Victor as the guest, which I think is a great spokesman. Despite what people say, I think he's an anti-drug, you know, anti-doping activist, not a criminal. But you know, what I'm told is that they're probably like next episode. They'll do it. I'm hoping they do. I know Jim Lampley is very passionate about this subject. It's not his decision, so I'm not laying blame at him or saying, oh, they're sweeping us under the rug. Nothing like that. What you hear is disappointment because I was excited that they were going to do a segment this time. But I think it's going to be next time. And you know, Jim's actual passion for this subject goes back like as far back as 1976. So like I said, you know, I praise him. He reached out to me and wanted to do the segment. And I'm really excited. I believe he will. I believe it's something he wants to do. So I'm bummed, but I'm hopeful.
Well, there you go.
Maybe. All right. What's that? No, I said maybe eventually. Then, like you said, he's open to the subject. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, if his show was on all the time, I think if it was on like every week, he would definitely do it. But you know, they take a little longer on HBO because they go very in depth. So I expect to do something excellent on the scoring.
All right, man. Good work.
All right. Thanks, Gino.
I appreciate it.
If you want to call in, Fight Fan.
Excellent segment on PEDs as well. Like I said, I want that clear. You know, I don't know if Jim listens to this show, and I don't want to piss him off if he does. Like I said, he reached out to me and to others in the anti-doping community and was like, I really want to do something on this, very passionate, and they will next week. Let me call in Danny Jacobs.
Go right ahead, you know, and I'm glad that he's that he's passionate about doing something like that because it makes up for all the bad calls that he's done on the HBO commentary on ringside. So if he listens and that pisses him off, oh well. Got to say what I got to say. What do you want me to say? Not the truth? Here on Leaving the Ring? Forget about it. Forget about it. And I believe we're back with our co-host, Gabriel Montoya. What's up, brother?
How you doing? I'm here with middleweight contender. I believe he's going to come back to middleweight. Daniel Jacobs, the golden child. Welcome, man. It's been a long time.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
How you doing, man?
Not much.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, our pleasure, dude. I'm
absolutely
glad you're
yeah.
able to come on.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was going to say, for him really quick, I think we should give him the panel to give us a rundown of what's been going on with his life, his health, and his career leading up to this point, if he can fill us all in.
Wow. Well, the last year of my life has really been probably the hardest year I've ever dealt with ever in my life. A year ago, I was diagnosed with a cancer called osteosarcoma, and it was a tumor that was wrapped around my spine, which led me to be paralyzed. and got emergency surgery, 6-hour surgery, in hospital for months doing rehab. And after the rehabilitation, I had to get radiation treatments. And that was another story. You know, that was mood swings up and down, loss of appetites, just hell. You know, I went through a lot in the last past year, but I'm proud to say that today I'm cancer free, and you know, my back is 100%. I'm back to training, and you know, I'm going to be fighting in this new stadium in Brooklyn, October 20th. So, yeah, I'm really, really, really excited.
That's good to hear. It's really good to hear, man.
It really is. Take us through. I mean, you mentioned that it was like emergency surgery. So, how did you first know? Was it something that you went to the doctor and they just said, "Hey, by the way," or did you notice symptoms?
I started to notice the symptoms, because as soon as we got back, me, Oscar, and a couple other fighters, we went to Iraq for a USO event to support the soldiers. As soon as we got back, I started noticing my left leg in particular, slowly but surely started to get weak. And I remember riding my bike to the gym and couldn't catch the pedal. It was very awkward, and it was very offbeat. So I remember just thinking that, you know, hey, okay, I'm not training. I'm just getting back into it. I'm a little weak. That's all I thought. Until 2 days later, I started to use a cane to walk, and then a cane turned into crutches, and then crutches turned into a wheelchair because I was completely, you know, paralyzed. And, you know, when I went to get, you know, checked out from the doctor, they led me to believe that it was just a pinched nerve. You know, so this whole time I was thinking it was okay, when in all reality, I had cancer. You know, so I got more studies done, and they realized it was a massive tumor that was wrapped around my spine. And, you know, the doctor said I'm very fortunate, because if I would have came in a week later, the tumor was growing so rapid that it could have slowed my heart down, you know, and I could have passed away. So I was very fortunate to go in at the time that I did it.
Wow.
You know, the doctors told me I would never be able to box again, and, you know, they told me I would never be able to walk properly or get my nerves to be 100%. And, you know, you could imagine the things that I was thinking at that time, or the emotions that was going through my body at that time. I was in a state of shock. I was just completely just, wow. This is very, very shocked. And, but, you know, I always kept my spirits in hospital, because you always hear about these stories where doctors say, you know, a person can do this and a person can do that. So I really had the mind frame of a champion, man, really. And, you know, I wanted to be in control of my destiny. I didn't let any doctor tell me, you know, what I can and cannot do. And with that being said, man, I went to rehabilitation. And even though it was very hard for me to move my legs or to learn how to walk again, I stuck with it, and I got through it, bro. And, you know, to this day, I'm very fortunate that I went through everything, because it makes me stronger as a person, man. It makes me appreciate everything that I have, and just a better, humble, more humble individual in general.
I mean, because you said, like, you know what, it sounded to me, well, let me ask you this. When something hits you this heavy, you either have an emotional breakdown, or you take it all in and you go, okay, I'm going to face it, I'm going to challenge it, and I'm going to fight through it. Which one of those would happen, or was it both, you know, one after the other?
I'm a Christian first and foremost, so I always put my faith in God and knew that He would get me through it. That was number one. But I'm not going to admit, I mean, I did have my down times where, you know, I believed that I wasn't going to be able to do the things I love, because the severeness of the surgery, you know, me having a lump in my back from, you know, a massive surgery, and me not being able to walk properly, or, you know, me not being able to bathe myself. It was all these things at once, you know, that really had me feeling like, you know, maybe I wouldn't really be able to do this again. And, you know, I was depressed here and there, but I had my family there. You know, I had people that was there for me every day, you know, and I had the support of that. So, you know, they pretty much got me through it, you know. Even though I was strong and I had a lot of faith, but my family was the number one reason why I got through this, because they was there for me. They put smiles on my face. You know, they brought me cheesecakes and all the McDonald's that I could possibly want. So I was in a very good mood in the hospital. Right.
Hell yeah.
So I was in a very good mood.
Cheesecake and
McDonald's.
Hey, cheesecake and McDonald's, man. That's like, you know, that puts a smile on my face right now.
I never thought a day in my life I would appreciate it, but oh, God, I was in love.
Absolutely, man. Now, at what turning point after going through the therapy and you know, going through that whole transition and getting healthier, and when you found out, okay, I'm in a state, my body's in a state of continue being an athlete. When did you go,
right,
I'm going to continue my boxing career. I'm going to go back and pick up where I left off. Or was there a thought of, good, you know what, even if I get healthy again and get back where I'm at, I probably shouldn't get into a sport like that because it's very dangerous.
Right. Well, now that I look back on it, man, it was absurd, but as soon as I got out the hospital, and I mean as soon as I got out the hospital, I went to the gym. You know, maybe 3 days after being home, I went to the gym. And here I am, not able really to walk properly. You know, I'm just wobbling like a penguin, and I have my brace on. You know, I put on my gloves, and I just do 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. And it was that determination that I had that, you know, really, I didn't want to feel sorry for myself. You know what I mean? I've been through a lot in my life. You know, me coming from Brooklyn and seeing the things that I've seen, I've been through a lot. But I just did not want to settle. And that's, you know, I didn't do it. You know, I was in the hospital for 2.5 months. And as soon as I got out, I went right back to the gym. You know, I can remember even, a month or 2 months afterwards, I was sparring. You know what I mean? I mean, I didn't do very well, but it was a determination that I had to get back to what I love to do, which is the sport of boxing.
Is it even a question in your mind that you're going to come back and be a contender?
No, that's not even a question. Like, you know, today, you know, I was sparring today, and I went 7 straight rounds, and I didn't lose anything. You know, it's amazing how a year ago how I was completely paralyzed to today where I'm going, you know, numerous rounds in the ring sparring with top athletes and being able to handle myself, if not take control. You know, and it just shows me how talented I am, how blessed I am, and how very fortunate I am to have a second chance to do what it is I love.
Wow. That's crazy. I mean, it's just, you know, we talked yesterday a little bit, and we were talking about Paul Williams and his determination. I mean, how hard is it? What is your perspective on watching him, what he's going through?
When I first heard it, my heart just dropped because never in my life would I want anybody to go through exactly what I went through. And he's in a very similar situation as far as being paralyzed and, you know, the doctor's telling you what you can't do and what you can do. And, you know, I feel completely bad, but I don't feel bad because I know that he's in control of his destiny just like I was. You know, if he believes, in which he does, that he will be able to walk again, you know, with strong faith, man, and with, you know, working at it and working hard and doing proper rehabilitation, you know, I'm sure he'll be able to walk, if not box again. So, you know, I support the guy. My heart goes out to him and his family.
Yeah, that's just some powerful stuff, Danny. I mean, you know, to be a fighter already, you got to be extraordinary. You know, to take punches for a living, you got to be just not just brave, but an extraordinary person. And what you kind of went through, and even with Paul Williams, you know, not giving up the good fight.
Yeah.
Man,
yeah.
I my hat's off to you guys, man. I mean, you guys are definitely an inspiration.
I really do.
It's an inspiration.
I want to make a note that, you know, I put a post on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram yesterday, and it was a picture of Muhammad Ali when I think when he was in Africa, and there was a bunch of Africans behind him, and I mean, there was a lot of them. But it was a very powerful picture. But in the caption I posted, it read, it said, I don't care about, well, it isn't important to me to be the greatest boxer of all time, because there's so many greats that didn't have the ability to inspire. Now that I have the ability or the opportunity to inspire, that's more important to me, and for that I'm grateful. So to me, it's really not about, you know, being the number one middleweight contender or middleweight champion. You know, it's really about affecting other people's lives and helping other people to be more appreciative or to look at me and get inspired to do more, to do better, or whatever life problems that they have, they will get them through it. You know what I mean? So that means more to me than being a champion or making thousands or hundreds of millions of dollars. You know, because it's the ability to change someone's life or the ability to inspire someone so far, way more longer than the ability to be great and make hundreds of millions of thousands of dollars. So,
not even that. I mean, you know, when you go back years, I mean, when everything is done and over with, and you know, you're done with your boxing career, and you know, and you go into retirement like Sugar Shane Mosley, and somebody asks you, what was the toughest fight you ever had, and you know, what was the toughest fight for you to beat? You can go back and go, cancer was my toughest fight, and I beat him. That alone right there.
Yeah,
my biggest
fight was definitely outside the ring. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know. That alone would shut anybody else. You know, when you get in that Hall of Fame panel, all the other fighters are even like, man, I don't want to be inducted with Danny Jacobs. Come on, are you serious? he gets
so
cheesecake at McDonald's.
Yeah.
you talked too about the supplement company that you work for, and I met them when the last time I saw you, we were hanging out post fight. And I got to meet your sponsors and all that. And they stayed with you through the whole thing. Talk about that, the company you work for, and what they've meant to you through all this.
Wow. Well, this company, well, first of all, you know, I'm very, very fortunate to be getting back to my part-time job, which is boxing. And my full-time job, which is this opportunity that I have with Your Health. You know, boxing, there's only a period of time where you can make numerous amounts of money, whereas this opportunity that I have, you know, I can make money or I could be successful and be able to help other people not only fulfill their dreams but to be successful and to inspire. So that's really the thing that I love about this company. But as far as Your Health as a whole and what they've done for me, man, Your Health is just such an amazing company. And throughout my whole stay at the hospital, you know, I've gotten visits, I've gotten calls, I've got support, I've gotten products which led to a speedy recovery. You know, Your Health is an amazing company, not just for this for their supplements, but just for the people involved in the company. You know, that's why I really support and I do the business with Your, because it's such an amazing company and it has the ability to change lives, just like it changed my life.
I've spoken to, I believe her last name is Miss Gomez. I can't remember her first name for some reason. I've spoken to her a few times, you know, and she's a wonderful person, great character. And this is way before. This was way before this, too. I'm talking about, I think it was like 4 years ago, talking to her, and she had told me a lot about the company. Before I even knew that you were part of the company, I was speaking to her back in the days and saw the transition, talking about from, you know, the way she looked to then, you know, just a completely different transformation. It was, you know, it was great. So, yeah, absolutely great company.
Yeah, well, man, to be honest, man, a lot of boxers really don't know too much about health and nutrition, and that's really my target, because the things that a lot of boxers have to go through to lose weight and, you know, to be in shape and things, they're really draining themselves. So it really was a goal for me to take over, you know, and supply education and supply the proper health and nutrition to the boxing community so that it can be a better sport. Because a lot of times, a lot of boxers lose not for not being a better boxer or lack of ability, but just a lack of health and nutrition. Yeah.
I think we're running into that a lot. The PED issue that came up, some of that was because a guy took a supplement that had a bunch of stuff in it that shouldn't have. Boxers are just too often, from financial advice to nutritional advice to fighting advice, they just listen to everybody. Yeah, you tell me, you're a fighter. Tell me I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's so true. I mean, you know, because it's just like boxers are uneducated in that area, so they're quick to look for, like, the new thing, the latest thing, or someone else is taking who they probably look up to. So, and 9 times out of 10, it's, you know, I mean, we can look for example. Look what happened with some of the most recent fighters. You know, they got tested positive for, I'm not sure exactly what they got tested positive for, but I'm sure it wasn't a banned substance. But the product that, you know, that yours has, I mean, is just all natural, man. And I'm sure I've been taking it for years now. And, you know, I've had plenty of drug tests and I've had plenty of, you know, studies that show that all these things are exactly what they say they are, all natural. And they do what they do, which is help me train better and to provide good health and nutrition for myself. Yeah.
So, do you know who you're fighting
October 20th? Yeah, October 20th, man. This is so special for me, man. Just because of simple fact that I am from Brooklyn. Like, the pride and the culture and the heritage that we have, all of us Brooklynites, man, it is so amazing. It's so rich. So to have the opportunity to fight at this, I mean, we have our own stadium. That's huge. Never would we imagine to have this outlet where we can perform in front of our people, you know. So for me to even be qualified or have an opportunity to fight here along with other great fighters like Paulie and a couple other Brooklyn fighters, you know, it's a very special moment. And, you know, with my story, as far as me overcoming the odds and, you know, me doing the things that people say I couldn't do, just to come back and to give that story and to fight in this new stadium where my people and my family and my friends are going to be, you just can't imagine how I feel. I'm probably at my all-time high right now.
You said for this camp, I know you came out with Freddie Roach, but for this camp, you're using old-school guys. I mean, it's just you're bringing it back to Brooklyn. You're doing it right.
Yeah, I'm gonna keep it Brooklyn, man, because – you know what? My team, Andre Rozier and Victor Roundtree, I love those guys with all my heart. And, you know, it was sad for me at the time that I made the switch to Freddie Roach, even though I believe it was the best move. But, you know, I still miss the memories that we had. I still miss the love that we all had during camp and the good times that we had. So I took it upon myself to, you know, make this fight with them because, you know, this is history, you know, the first time ever. You know, and I would love to share this experience with them. You know, and no one's deserving of this opportunity more than my team. We're going to do this fight together, man. And then, you know, I don't know what's going to happen for the near future, but, you know, I'm just going to take it one step at a time and, you know, do this fight with them. And, you know, hopefully we can have those same memories and you know, do this history thing together. That would be so amazing. But, you know, to do this with them, man, it's just an honor, and it's very deserving.
Man, we wish you all the luck in the world, and can't wait for your comeback. And, you know, an extraordinary story, Danny. Keep us updated, and everybody, all the fans, we're definitely pulling for you, brother. Thanks for coming on, man, and speaking to us here on Leaving the Ring. Much appreciated, and like I said, inspiring, very inspiring.
You know, I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Before you go, you know, Danny, it's just you're the first fighter I covered from zero to now. You know, I saw your very first fight. We've had a long history, and I've been on this ride with you, and I just hear a light coming out of you. You really seem to soak up every moment, and you want, like you said, you want to share that experience with them. You want to share your experience with us, and you just really it really is inspiring, dude. And I just have so much. I do have much love for you, and I'm so glad that you're here with us and able to do and understand what it is you're put here to do. And just much respect, man. Thank you.
And you need your rematch.
That really means a lot.
And you need your rematch with Gabriel Montoya on Fighter versus Ryder, dog, because you were wrong.
Hopefully, when he makes his creative player, his creative player would be of his age and not 20 or 21 years old like it was last time.
Yeah, definitely, man. Again, Danny,
I don't think they'll go that high. I don't think they have age that high.
Right. That's funny.
All right,
well,
man.
I look forward to it. I'm going to try to come out to Brooklyn, and I'd like to be there for that. So I'm going to see what I can do.
Yes, man. I really would love to share this experience with you, man. You've been there almost day one, man, and you've been covering me, and you've been doing great stories on me. So, you know, I would definitely love for you to be there, man. And I want to thank you personally for just, you know, even believing in me or to do stories on me or to put it out to the public, man. I really want to thank you and, you know, show my appreciation to you. So thank you.
It's been my pleasure, man. We'll do more. We'll do more.
Absolutely.
All right, man.
Have a good night, brother.
Stay with the spank, and I'll see you.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, man. Take care.
Take care, guys.
Danny, the golden child, Jacobs here on Leaving the Ring. First interview he's done since his comeback.
Wow.
Great story. Great story. If you missed the interview, don't worry about it. As soon as the show is over, it takes within, I think, 30 to an hour. You get a replay, and you can catch it up on the archives on Leaving Ring. Go to the website. Be sure you check out Boxing Fix every Sunday night, 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern, and catch Noche de Boxeo, 5 o'clock Pacific, 8 o'clock Eastern on Monday nights. Todo Español, Todo Boxeo on all Spanish sister stations to Leaving the Ring. And the Boxing Fix is a blitz boxing show, on the horn type of boxing show. Everything's fast paced, and they talk about everything that is on the undercards or leading into the following week on the undercards in boxing. So make sure you get your fix. I'm hearing and finding out that there's a possibility that Brandon Rios is going to be stepping out of his fight with Mauricio Herrera due to a shoulder injury. Our writer from Leaving the Ring, Josh McDaniel, made a call really quick, calling Mauricio Herrera to speak to him. Josh, you with us, brother? Let us know what he had to say really quick, man, to inform the listeners.
Yeah, I'm here. I talked to him. You know, he's kind of bummed out. You know, he's looking forward for the fight. But, you know, as far as the card being canceled totally or, you know, they're not sure yet, he's actually trying to find out right now as far as if they're going to find someone else for him. But he's saying he's hopefully going to find out soon, and he's going to he'll post it up on his Facebook, and he's going to let everyone know about it. So hopefully, he'll keep me posted and let me know if he gets another fight, because he said he was looking forward to getting that chance for Rios, and I think a lot of people were too.
So let me just make this clear: it's not a definite that the fight is off, right? He doesn't really know; he's not sure yet, and he's just hoping that it's not.
Yeah, as far as what he told me, he's like, he's not sure at all. They told him not to, you know,
up the gun.
Don't expect anything right now. They don't know. I guess they wanted to try to find a person for him, but they don't know if they can. So he's just saying he actually literally said got his fingers crossed that they find him someone.
Well, there you go. Josh McDaniel from Leaving the Ring, making a phone call, trying to find out, man. Make sure that the facts are, that we get the facts correct. Hey, thanks, brother. Putting you back on hold, okay?
All right, man.
Thanks, man.
He'll have a little something posted on Leaving the Ring in a short bit. He'll write something up really quick. And he'll probably end up trying to call the Garcia camp too as well to get some more information. But anyways, our next guest should be John Molina Jr., who's going to be the co-main event of the Andre Ward and Chad Dawson fight set in Oakland, California, my neck of the woods in the Big Bay Area. So it should be fun. This is a fight I like with Antonio DeMarco, man. This is it's going to steal the show. You know, it's going to really steal the show. And it's going to give the Bay Area fans a little bit of Molina and DeMarco, of something, you know, because there's not a whole lot of boxing heads, you know, unfortunately, in the Bay. They've been kind of falling off, kind of tending back to MMA, even though I've said, you know, it is a boxing town, but it's a very small community of boxing fans in the Bay. But if they have a scent of, if they come out, in other words, to watch this fight or watch it on television, they're gonna, I think they're gonna be sucked into being a boxing fan, with especially with Molina and DeMarco. These guys don't take a backward step. They're gonna come forward and they're gonna bang each other up.
Somebody else just tweeted at me, Mike Coppinger. He heard from a reliable source, Brandon Rios weighed close to 170 last week.
Oh, wow.
I don't know. That's up to him. I don't really know. You know, seemed like everything was going fine as far as I knew. But what do I know? I'm just, you know, what can I say? I thought that was going to be a good fight. I thought Herrera versus Rios was going to be a solid fight. I'm sure Brandon's not pulling out because he doesn't want to be in it. Thanks on Josh to be on top of this. Hang on one second. I'm getting kind of bombarded with text right now after that little bomb.
I know it sucks. What I do now with my phone is I put it aside, but I do check it occasionally while we're on the show, but it can sidetrack me, or I get direct messages on you know, Twitter or Facebook, people hitting me up. And
I'm still kind of taking in that Danny Jacobs interview, to be quite honest. I mean, I
know.
Didn't realize
it was a really powerful interview.
You and I hadn't really talked this whole time. We talked a couple times on Facebook. I called in when I heard that he was ill, but kind of kept my distance. You know, we're still just reporter and fighter. Obviously, we had a shared a moment there at the end, but it's like this. You know, it's like I said, I'm not even going to speak to it. I know there's people that attack me for being a Danny Jacobs guy. But I followed him. He was like the first prospect I saw in a major Vegas fight. And so his pro debut, that's kind of a special thing when you see a guy grow from there to where he's gotten to and then beyond. You don't just abandon a guy because he stops winning. I've had a chance to get to know him and people around him a little bit, and he's a good dude. And this is a very human, it's a person-on-person sport. I'm just amazed at where he came from and to hear it from him. What he had to go through, and then to put it in perspective with Paul Williams, and now we're hearing there may be a chance that he could walk again. They're not even going to rule out boxing again. The mind is and faith, all those things are incredible. You know, it's just
absolutely
inspiring. And for him to kind of go, it's not even about being world champion anymore. It's about enlightening people and educating them and helping them. That's just fantastic. We need more people like that, like 20,000 more people like that.
Exactly. It was a really powerful interview, you know, and at the same time it had a good ending. That's the part that I did like, you know. It didn't end with a travesty. It ended with a happy ending. And to hear this young man who was a prospect and high prospect, a blue chip prospect, to kind of fall off with the Pure Rock fight, to try to rebound, but end up getting another obstacle that he has to get through first to rebound in his boxing career and beat that. That's extraordinary. That to me is just like, wow. Enough said. You know, don't question the guy's heart. Don't question his ability. Look what he did. Look what he went through. Look what he's gone through. Waiting for John Molina to call in here on Leaving the Ring so we talk to him about his upcoming fight. Antonio DeMarco. Linus saying that he's not excited about it. Oh, come on, brother. How could you not be excited about this fight? This is guaranteed somebody getting knocked out. Guaranteed two guys are going to be throwing big punches at each other. And these are two big punchers, in my opinion. Two big punchers.
Yeah.
DeMarco has been a bit more active. Well, he's been more active.
I was supposed to actually go out and see them, I think, Friday or Saturday. I think it's Friday I'm supposed to go out, which is kind of brutal. So I told them I'd go out and train at that gym. I don't know if you've ever trained inside the Ten Goose. Boy, it's hot. Like, Joe's always been a, like, keep it as hot as possible kind of guy in that gym. And so that's going to be kind of fun, considering my Vegas weekend, which was like 3 or 4 days, and I haven't really been in the gym all week. That should be ugly. I'm excited to see those two guys together. They had a—I don't know why they had a falling out, because they definitely have a chemistry, Joe Goosen and John Molina Jr. I really enjoyed watching them together, just kind of the banter. But they seem to understand exactly who John is as a fighter and what he needs to do to win.
I think John feels like maybe he should box a little more. Is he calling
right.
in, or are we calling
I'm,
him
I'm, in? I'm going to be calling him in right now. I'm just getting his number. I'm typing it in, so go ahead and keep saying what you're saying.
I don't know what the deal is. I didn't even know he had gone back to John to Joe. I know they were in arbitration with Goosen and all that, and they ended up deciding to just stay together and kind of work things out. John's got a nice high ranking. Is anybody else hearing that echo?
Please enjoy the surrounding.
I think it's my
phone while your party is reached.
It might be the clock up.
This is lovely.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, can I please speak to John?
Speaking.
What's up, brother? This is Dave Duenas with Gabriel Montoya on Leaving in the Ring. Man, you picked up the phone too early. We were just starting to get into your ringtone there.
Hey, that's that classical stuff, man. I keep it real classical for you guys, for you educated folks.
Oh, man, we're talking about some way, way back hip-hop right there, man.
That's what it is.
Got a great fight coming up at the Oracle Oakland Arena, the co-main event under the Dawson and Ward fight against a tough-as-nails Mexican fighter, Antonio DeMarco. I actually like this fight a whole lot. And even my co-host, Gabriel, who's going to say what's up to you in a short bit right now, liked this fight. Now, when this fight was brought up to you, which to us, you've been on here before. You're a guy that automatically says, yeah, I want that fight. Let me take that fight. But you've been having some, correct me if I'm wrong here, you've been having some outside business with the ring that's been kind of keeping you out of the ring. Is that true?
Yeah, but we already rectified that. We came to got to the bottom of it, went through the ugly process of, what boxing's all about. And it was my growing pains, and we figured it out. Everyone's happy, and we're obviously going forward now with this fight. And I'm pretty excited with Antonio DeMarco. It's going to be a great opportunity for myself to showcase, and styles mesh very well together, and I'm looking forward to a beautiful night of boxing and a new world champion.
You know, that layoff has got to definitely have to take a toll on a young guy like yourself, you know, and for a comeback fight, for coming back from the layoff and facing a champion like Antonio DeMarco, how do you get yourself to make sure that you're in full condition? Because obviously the question is going to be is ring rust, you know? I mean, how well you're going to perform, you've been off, you haven't fought in that high level in recent because you've been, feuding with other things that DeMarco probably has more than an edge against you right now, being that he's been active.
Well, I can give you I do have a tune-up fight, if you will, although I don't like to look past anyone within a week from Saturday, on the 23rd. So that in itself is going to be a little bit of, just revving the engine, if you will. But again, you don't look past anybody.
Right.
And, and I'm not comparing myself to Sugar Ray Leonard, so please don't let anyone get that mistaken. But at the same token, I mean, when he came back to fight Hagler, he was off for 5 years. And, again, I'm not comparing myself talent-wise by any means, but I'm talking about the heart and the will to get back in the ring and get in there with the best in the world. If fighters fight, and that's what we do. I know how to fight. If you were to give me a bicycle, I could jump on a bike. I haven't ridden one in years. It's the same thing. And it's an opportunity of a lifetime for me. And I'm not going to let it pass by. And I know what I'm capable of and what I'm going to do. And I can't wait for the 8th. I get butterflies just thinking about it.
I can't wait too, man. I live in the Bay, so it's going to be a short drive for me to go and see this fight. I should be there. I should be there in Media Row. I'm going to pass it over to a guy. I think you probably do know him. He's a regular dude. He's on the beat. Big deal. Gabriel Montoya, man.
the Aaron Brockovich of writing and boxing.
There you go.
That's beautiful. That's funny.
And like I said, I mean that with the utmost respect, Gabriel, and you know that.
I know.
I should make that my dad is like, for years, said, you need a trademark. I think I should do that. Just have like the bra that is always kind of showing. I'll just wear the tank top. Just that first.
No,
it'll work.
With the three hairs, the three hairs that are sticking out of your chest.
Exactly. Hey, depending on what country you're in, some people like it.
One of your toughest fights until you knocked him out was Hank Lundy. Just the movement, and you were tracking him down, and he was that, you know, athletic boxer type, and you tracked his ass down, and you knocked him out. But then you also had that Martino Onario fight. I mean, you and I both talked about it. You were sick as a dog. I mean, like, ridiculously sick. I don't think people really understand it. But in a way, like, that's kind of the worst nightmare, is a Mexican that can box, because he's durable and he can box. Do you look at DeMarco that way, that the guy's going to be durable, that's going to box? Or do you think you can track him down like Hank Lundy, knock him out?
I think I'm going to be able to track him down. I think DeMarco's, you know, his claim to fame is he's very tough. And when he gets tagged, he has the Eric Morales mentality that he's going to get you back. I mean, he's not going to go run and hide. And there's no crap talking I could talk about the guy, because he's actually a stand-up guy. Given the face value that I met him in the interview, he's actually a really cool guy. And it's something personal. It's that he's got what I want. That's the bottom line. But I don't think I'm going to have to go look for him. He's going to be right there. And it's just going to be two worlds colliding in that ring. And he said it best when he's willing to die in that ring, and as am I. So the heart that he's going to bring to the table and the heart that I'm going to bring to the table, I mean, the fans are really, really going to win on this one, because yeah, I can almost guarantee you this fight's not going 12 rounds.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
No,
I don't think it is either, you know.
No.
But you got to remember, and the intangibles, I mean, you guys talk about the ring rust, the intangibles, and I'm not trying to play – you know, the harmonica or anything like this, but, you know, I'm expecting my first baby girl on the way. I mean, take that into the mix, along with my regular heart and my come-forward style and my all-action style. I mean, these are things that you can't even, that you can't look past. I'm hungry. I'm more hungry than I've ever been in my whole life. I mean, the fact that I got to see my baby on the 3D ultrasound and see her, I mean, that to me alone is just so much more motivation. And believe me, if I got to go through hell back again three times to become victorious that night, that's what I'm going to do. And I promise you guys, I'm going to leave every ounce of my will, heart, dedication in that ring that night. I can guarantee you that Antonio DeMarco is going to claim to do the same. The difference between me and him, and again, this is not a poke or a stab at him, but the difference between me and him is we saw what happened when the tides got high on him. That's all I have to say. We saw what happened. So there is a blueprint to beat him. With me, you can say there's a blueprint with the way Honorio beat me. But at the same token, you know, and I know, I was completely sick on that fight. And I still, if you watch that fight, landed in my thoughts and actually hurt him.
In that tide, though, that you talk about with Antonio DeMarco, the thing, though, with that, the speed is what gave DeMarco a lot of problems, you know, with Edwin Villarreal. With yourself, I mean, we got to, you know, I think you know this, John. You're not the fastest guy in the world. I think what you...
What are you talking about? What are you talking about? Have you seen my fights? No, I'm just kidding.
But your power is something that, I've witnessed it live. I mean, when you punch, it sounds like a big, there's a massive echo behind it. And I think a lot of people don't give you that full credit, you know, they kind of write you off because of that. Almost like Hank Lundy, people were like, well, he was losing that fight, but it was the punch that ended the fight. It was the punch that made you the winner. And I think that punch alone is what gets you out of a lot of mess. DeMarco, though, has kind of showed that he could take a really good punch from a really big puncher. So what do you have to do different, though? If you don't have the speed to beat him, but you do have the punch, but he has the chin to go through that punch, what do you do to secure
like they say it best on HBO, if a puncher lands 50% of his punches, it's usually a tall tale sign of who's going to come out victorious that night. Yes, he does have a chin. Yes, he does come forward. Yes, he's tenacious. He's everything that you want a champion to be. But at the same token, he's never felt my power, an underestimated power. I am the hardest puncher in the lightweight division. And yes, the late Edwin Villarreal was 24-0 with 24 knockouts. But I've had people that trained Edwin Villarreal and went on record and did press conference and said that if punching power is a scale of 1 to 10, Edwin Villarreal is a 10 and, or a 7, and I'm a 10. I know what I possess. I know how hard I hit. And I'm going to definitely test the waters. I'm going to test DeMarco's chin I'm going to test his body. I'm going to test his heart. I'm going to test his will. And I'm going to leave everything in the ring that night to come out victorious. And that's what I got to do. There's, if you want my game plan, here it goes in a nutshell. My game plan is to win the fight, and that's what I'm going to do.
There you go.
Now, I thought Dave mispronounced names. Both of you guys, it's Valero.
Valero, my bad.
Let's just call him a hell of a puncher. Let's call him that.
No, but we've talked about that, about your punch. And I've talked to a few people about your punch, and I've never heard bad reviews. You know, it's generally like, wow, I don't want to get hit by that guy. But at the same time, like, you know, I know you were saying that the blueprint with Valero and all that. What are the things that you take from what Valero did? Was it just kind of just staying right on him and just letting go of those power punches and
relentless pressure. Make it very uncomfortable. Make him fight 3 minutes of every round. And the fact that I'm going to be in the best shape of my life, I am going to be willing to go 15 rounds that night, nonstop, without taking a backward step. That is the game plan to beating him. Nonstop, to be in the best shape of my life, to be a marathon runner, and to be able to apply that pressure. And when you think it's over, it's going to add 10 times more. That's the game plan to beat him. Mentally, you're not going to beat me. Mentally, he will not beat me. He's not going to deter me by any way, shape, or form. Do I understand he's a great world champion? Absolutely. I think he's a warrior. We saw what he did with Linares. He was losing that fight, and he came back and won because of his heart and his grit and his will. But I'm going to challenge that. I got to go above and beyond that. And I think I believe in myself that I possess more than that than he does.
It's going to be, you know, I think it's going to be a great fight. I mean, you definitely say you're the puncher, he's the boxer, and that's you expect that to play out that way, even though he's an aggressive boxer. Don't you think it's in his best interest?
And a really good puncher, too.
He's definitely an above-average puncher. I mean, let's not get him mistaken. I mean, he's a decent puncher. I'm not going into that ring thinking he's a Hank Lundy because, you know, he could punch. He definitely could punch.
Right.
If that was a knock at Hank Lundy, yes, it was, guys, if you guys
missed
it.
I think the difference, though, is that he has to land a lot of punches. You know what I mean? He has to break you down where your punching power is a little bit more different. It's just like a bang. That's it. It's done and it's over.
And I believe that, man. Like I said, at the end of the night, the fans are really, really going to get their money's worth this night. I mean, I believe, and I'm not saying it because I want to toot my own horn, I believe it's a candidate for Fight of the Year. You have two Mexican-style fighters. Everyone knows my game plan. Everyone knows where I'm coming from, and everyone knows that DeMarco likes to engage. And he's not the hardest to find either. I mean, he's definitely not the hardest to find. So he's not a slick, tricky guy. He can box a little bit, yes. He's southpaw, okay, but that also falls right into my right hand. So, I mean, it's a toss-up fight, I believe, for the fans, for the adamant boxing fans, and I believe I'll be the underdog, given the fact of my ring rust and my layoff. But believe me, I haven't been out of the ring. I haven't been out of the gym. And I'm so hungry for this fight, I'm willing to die that night, just like I'm sure he is. And I know fighters say it, but I really mean it. I mean, this is what I want. I've always wanted the WBC title. I've always wanted a world championship title, and this is my opportunity.
Man, I can't wait for this fight. I got to tell you that, man.
Talk to me about how
do you guys think the fight's going?
Like?
Say it again, Gabriel. I'm sorry.
I wanted to know about your return to work with Joe Goosen.
Mm-hmm.
How has that been, like, returning back to him and because you've tried out a few other things since then. So how is it like bringing the tools that you've put on the road back to Joe and his particular offense?
I'm a big believer in everything happens for a reason. I've always told you that from day one. And being with Joe, the intensity that he brings to the table, the game plan that he brings to the table, it's been really, really fantastic. And I'm not just saying that because – well, I have to say it now because I'm back with him. No, I'm saying it because it was a decision that our team made, and I'm not taking a backward step about it. And it's been – we've been working really, really well. I mean, we're doing 35, 40 rounds right now, nonstop hard work in a 100-degree gym. So we're ready to go.
How do we see it playing out?
Say that again.
You wanted to know.
You were asking how we saw it playing out. Dave, I'll let you go first.
I don't even want to answer that right now, man. I've
always told you guys, whether it's biased, don't be biased. There's a lot of reporters out there that'll get into a gym and all of a sudden be biased to that one fighter. I'm not going to name names, but you guys are very knowledgeable in the business. You know who I'm talking about.
Right.
So
right.
Whether we're friends or we're doing this on a professional level, if you feel that I'm the underdog, hey, I take my hat. I respect your guys' opinion because you guys are professionals. So don't ever feel like you have to out of your tongue with me because
no.
I'll never disrespect you guys
that.
One way or another.
No, definitely. No, I honestly think this is the only thing that, and that's what I mentioned to you, the ring rust, you know, the time, the layoff. I think that's against you, if anything. But when we talk about skill level, when we talk about punching power, I like the fact you said it's a toss-up because that's honestly how I truly feel. But I think I have to sit back just for a little bit to kind of rethink this before I can make my pick. And that's kind of a norm of what I do is I don't jump off the wagon real quick and go, well, I think this guy's going to lose. Like a lot of fight fans or media, they'll be like, well, this is not a toss-up. This guy's going to get murdered. Because boxing is not about you blowing out people left and right. It's about timing and how you land that punch and where exactly are you at to land that punch. You know, that's what boxing is about, and that's why we've this sport is so great. We've seen underdogs. We've seen guys take layoffs. We've seen guys get knocked out on their last fight, but then have a great comeback on their next one. You know, so I never count a man out, but you definitely got to sit back and kind of look, okay, what do we got here? So you'll have my pick, man. I'll definitely give you my pick. I'm going to see you in the Bay, you know.
Well, like I said,
I'm curious to come see you in the gym. I want to see you in the gym tomorrow, I think.
Okay.
I'm hoping. And
yeah,
you know,
that would be great.
Is tomorrow a good day?
Yeah, tomorrow's fine, actually. Right now we're kind of toning down, if you will, because of the fight next week. I'm walking around right on weight. So we're at that stage of the game, if you will. I mean, you guys know the fight game and you know where we're at. So if you really want to see the intensity, I don't believe I'm sparring. If I am, it's what we call batting practice, dress rehearsal,
right.
If you will. Kind of believe me that the heart, the will, the dedication for this camp was excellent, and I'm just looking forward for that world title fight. And I think the fans are really going to get their money's worth. I really, come on, guys, you know it's going to be a fun fight.
Oh,
I mean, that's
a great
that's,
fight.
Oh yeah, it's going to be ridiculous. I could venture into my pick. I just. You've been at a couple different gyms and working on some new things with different trainers. So I'm curious to see how you've grown during this period. You know, what tools you've added, and you and I have talked about it privately about what you're doing new. So I kind of want to see that before I can kind of fully say. But I mean, you know, obviously he's going to be the favorite. He's the champ. But he's been stopped before. You had a loss, but you weren't stopped. That's something that we know that it's possible with him, even though he's probably grown from the loss, and he showed tenacity against Linares in stopping him late in a fight that many people had him losing until that moment. I think it's going to be a war. And if he can take your power, it doesn't mean you're going to stop giving it to him. And I think it's going to come all the way down to the wire at this point. I won't make a pick on who I think is going to win right now. But I just think the type of fight, if he boxes smart, I think you got problems. If he, you can land on him and figure out how to deliver that one to, he's going to have problems. And if you're able to cut that distance and get him into the corners and do what you do, which is be a physically imposing 135, it's going to be your night. You know,
it's a winnable fight for him.
It's a fun fight, man.
It's a winnable fight too. I mean, it is a winnable fight. I mean, this is
very.
even though with the layoff, to tell you the truth, even with the layoff, and the more I think about it. This is a really good comeback fight for you because DeMarco doesn't have all those added features with speed and he's a great technician and he's a great counterpuncher. He almost kind of mirrors you in terms of coming forward, wants to bang it out with you. He's going to want to be there in the mix. So this is a great way of coming back. You're not getting a Hank Lundy who's going to run around the ring and, you know, try to pot shot you. You're going to have a guy that's going to be easy to find, and that's why I like this match a lot. I mean,
definitely. It's definitely going to be a beautiful thing. And then when I land my shot and I hurt him, I don't think, like I said, DeMarco's a good guy. When I do hurt him, he's not going to say I tripped him either. So, I mean, that's, you know.
Wow.
Never on, and he goes, dude, he didn't knock me out. We're like, what? He didn't knock you out. Dude, you were out cold. I go, you think you're still out cold right now to think that.
Well, put it this way. Hank Lundy's got his hands full against Beltran, so let's see how that pans out for him.
Yeah.
And at the same time, with me and DeMarco, I'm beyond excited. I seriously go to sleep at night thinking about it. I mean, as a little boy, I dreamed about this fight, and I know it sounds very cliche, but it's very true. I mean, I would be in my house having this world title fight as a kid at 11 years old, doing the scenario back and forth in my head, and it's just weird. I was just talking to a guy today about it, that now it's my time to actually live my dream. And I mean, that's the human will. I mean, that's very powerful stuff right there, man. It is, let alone the tenaciousness and the power that I possess. It's going to be a very exciting night. That's without saying. I think HBO really did did the right thing by pulling the trigger on this fight.
Well, there you go,
yeah,
brother.
I agree. Bring us more.
And also, kudos to my promoter, Goose and Tudor, and Gary Shaw Promotions for making this fight happen, because there's risk on both ends, and they both stepped up to the plate and made it happen. And Antonio DeMarco for accepting the challenge.
Yeah, great fight.
I agree with that. Particularly like I wouldn't call them. Dan's got a lot of history, and Gary's a lot of history, so to call him a smaller promoter is kind of, I hope they don't take it as an insult. But, you know, there's the big two, you know, Golden Boy and Top Rank, and then there's the more independent level guys. And I think that's what they have to do is risk. You know, they've got one guy's got DeMarco, one guy's got you. You've got to risk those guys that are at that level so that you guys can break through and get to that next level, that higher status. And to do it on HBO,
absolutely.
Yeah. Congratulations, dude. It's going to be a fun night.
Thank you. Believe me, I'm very, and I'm going to show that I'm well-deserving of this opportunity come September 8th.
There you go, September 8th at the Oakland Oracle Arena, the co-main event with Andre Ward and Chad Dawson, John Molina versus Antonio DeMarco. It's going to be a great, great night of boxing, a great matchup. It's going to steal the show, man. I definitely going to steal the show in the Bay. Hey, John, thanks for calling in, man, and speaking to us here on Leaving the Ring, brother.
Hey,
much appreciated.
Not a problem. And one last thing, I want to say thank you guys for wording this right, because it's not an undercard fight. It's a co-feature.
Co-feature, exactly. All right, man.
All right, guys. I'll talk to you guys before the fight. Have a good one.
You too, man.
All right, man. Okay,
bye-bye.
Later.
Real busy here on Leaving the Ring. It's been a fast-paced interviews left and right, boxing fans calling in. Been told that Chris the Nightmare Oriella has he's re-injured his shoulder, something recurring. Josh McDaniel's on top of it. He called Henry Ramirez to find out confirmation, and it looks like he's going to be out of the fight too in his upcoming bout, which is on the Josecito and Ortiz.
Two? We have Areola's hurt and Rios is hurt?
Yeah, two guys. And so he did call to get a confirmation, and that's what he was told by Henry Ramirez, the head trainer of Chris the Nightmare. He's going to have something written up really quick and be able to put it on Leaving the Ring. Man, we got like only 2 minutes left. We haven't even done our fight schedule. So I guess we should just do our fights, our predictions of the two big high-profile fights. You know, Adam McBack in the ring with Bryant Jennings, heavyweight. I'll let you get your pick in first, Gabriel.
Let me pull up the fight schedule. All of a sudden, it was just 2 minutes, right?
2 minutes, man. I mean, it's like, boom, we've been going pretty quick on here. Time flies when you're having fun on Leaving the Ring.
Apologies to Jose Ramirez. We were going to have him on tonight, and we kind of double-booked, and we went with Mr. Valina, who's fighting for the world title. No disrespect to Jose. We'll hopefully have him on next week. Friday night, let's just fly through it. The Kimisi Civic Center in Kimisi, Florida, Telemundo, Len Donaire versus Daniel Lozano. Underneath that is David Quijano versus Raul Hidalgo. Jumping right to Saturday, the big fights. HBO, the Sun Bowl, El Paso, No Beer Bowl. Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. on HBO, 45-0 versus N1 versus Andy Lee, 28-1 for the WBC middleweight title belt. I'm taking Chavez Jr. by late stoppage.
I'm picking, you know, Chavez Jr. too by late stoppage. I mean, you know, I hate the word tailor-made, but this is Andy Lee is definitely tailor-made for Chavez. You know, he's Not the fastest guy in the world. Doesn't have really good head movement. He's going to be a guy there to be hit. But I think he's going to make Chavez Jr. And I like what you said. You know, you said, I forgot what you tweeted, but, you know, it was basically saying you have a huge feeling that Chavez is going to come in overweight in this fight, not make the weight. And I agree with you, bro. I agree with you. I don't think he's going to make the weight.
I have a funny feeling about it. It's going to be, another, just not a black eye, but a big belly for boxing. The Bonnet Smart Erosion, 32-0 versus Ryan Davis, 24-9-3. Of course, Bonnet is going to win. At the Prudential Center, Newark, New Jersey.
So you can keep tweeting. Go ahead.
At the Prudential Center, Newark, New Jersey, where Steve Kim will be drinking a lot of Grey Goose. NBC Sports, Tomasz Adamek, 45-2 versus Eddie Chambers, 36-2. I'm going Eddie Chambers. I'm going to go Eddie Chambers, I think. I'm not really sure.
I like Eddie Chambers in this fight. The only thing is that, you know, Adamek is a pressure guy, and he does have boxing skills. I mean, there are some ring smarts there. He's not just a brute. He's a guy that can put punches together, and he can move when he wants to move. Eddie Chambers, though, is a boxer. The thing, though, with the heavyweights and with the boxers, they haven't been doing too well against big punchers. So I'm expecting Adamek to land big shots, kind of wear them down. And honestly, Gabriel, I kind of see a bit of a boring fight, to tell you the truth, man.
You know what? I don't disagree with you. You know, like Steve was like, "Oh, it's gonna be action." I'm like, I don't think it's gonna be action. I think it's gonna be boring. It's gonna be a four corners offense in the fight.
But I'm gonna go Adamek.
If he comes in light, he can go after him. You're gonna go Adamek.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Adamek. Just because he's not a natural heavyweight, he's gonna come in at a good weight, Adamek, and he's gonna go after him. And I think that he's not going to catch him earlier. He's going to have to work. This is going to be a cat-and-mouse fight here, and I think he's going to be able to probably do more punching, get more of the telling blows, and he should be able to get the decision over Eddie Chambers.
Yeah, I think so. It could be a decision. Bryant Jennings, who everybody's talking about, is the next great heavyweight, 13-0 versus Steve Collins, 25-1. I'm going to take Jennings. You know, I think main events is solid matchmaking. I think they're going to do that again with this. You know, it should be a good fight, though. I think Jennings is a fun fighter to watch. So I want to take him by, like, eighth round knockout.
I like Jennings, and he was on Noche de Boxeo. They had a chance to interview him. We'll probably try to get him on here on Leaving the Ring after his fight, that's coming up. I hope Jennings keeps winning, because he is definitely on a collision course with another American heavyweight out there by the name of Seth Mitchell. So a lot of people are really high on Jennings. I like Jennings, but I'm still a little bit more high on Seth Mitchell. I think, though, by both of them, they're competing, to get to the elite level. As long as they keep going, I think we're in gear of having a really good, really, really good, exciting heavyweight in the long run.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. Well, we'll see. He's 13-0. Everybody gets so excited. You know, this decision ruined boxing. It's dead. This heavyweight beat some guy who was supposed to. He's the future. You know, let's all just relax and let it play out. And then we'll get there and then we'll know. So, Dave, it's 8:02. Who knows if anybody's listening, but great show as always. Really fun interviews. Shane Mosley, Danny Jacobs, Tony Thompson, Johnny Molina. Sorry to Jose Ramirez. Dave, I'll see you next week.
All right, brother. Everybody else out there, enjoy the fights this weekend. Be sure to tune in to our other two shows and buy our magazine, Undisputed Fight Magazine. You buy the May issue, you get the June issue for free. Again, don't drink and drive, everybody. Well, you're not going to be drinking and driving in Texas, but everybody else is in California, New York, and et cetera, et cetera. Don't drink and drive. Be safe and enjoy the weekend. Happy Father's Day to everybody out there. If you're a father, take care of your children. That's what you're supposed to do. You don't say, "I take care of my children." You're supposed to take care of your children, morons. Anyways, have a good night, man, here on Leaving the Ring.
Peace.